so hype right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RST, Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
He will.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
TLT, Sports PhD.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RST, Renegade Radio. The plug is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello? You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative.
Jeez, we don't make excuses.
We're not going to make any excuses.
You need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, RSG, Renegade Radio. Real guys talk real sports. I am one-third of the illustrious three-man booth, Marcus the Game Changer. I will be holding you down this evening. Allow me to introduce my comrades in the sports radio game. I got my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
Well, you know, I'm just glad that it's good to be back in RSG zone after a week away on the road with my daughter. And so I'm excited about what we have going on tonight. We got a great show.
That we do. Now, to round out the three-man booth, we have Phil T. Sports PhD. How you feeling, my man? PhD must be having some difficulties in looking at the board. He's there, but he's not there. We'll keep it rolling. Now, we have a slamming, jam-packed show lined up for you tonight. We have some special guests. We have Coach Leopold from UW-Whitewater coming on with us. Division III National Champion Football Program, the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater Warhawks. The head coach will be joining us tonight. We also have Georgia State head coach and former NFL great Bill Curry coming on with the Real Sports Guys tonight. So we'll be getting to those two interviews to start out the show. We have our resident NBA expert, Justin Page, who will be checking in with us this evening to talk some hoops. After that, we're going to get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We'll preview next week, and we're going to get into the shutdown. We got a really, really NBA heavy show, so we're gonna keep it rolling. We're gonna keep it tight. We're gonna keep it moving. You're rolling with the Real Sports Guys, RealSportsGuys.com. Again, hit us on Facebook at Real Sports Guys on Facebook. Also, check us out on Twitter. Again, this is Renegade Radio. We're gonna hold you down. 8:30, 10:30 Tuesday nights. So before we get into the meat of the show, I want to talk about something that is not necessarily sports related, but it's definitely something that, you know, we try to bring you topics across the board. We don't want to just stick to sports. We want to touch on a lot of things because we're very diverse individuals ourselves. Coachella, the musical festival in California, a very eclectic mix of musical tastes. something groundbreaking happened there this weekend. Something that people of my generation, the Bond generation, Fields generation, something that we've been speculating about for many, many years, at least the last 15 to 16 years. Tupac Shakur came back in hologram form, which is just bananas. It's just crazy. Tupac Shakur, if you haven't seen it, Google it, YouTube it. Snoop Dogg performs with Tupac. Tupac performs at Coachella. Any of those things will get you a YouTube video clip of it. It's pretty interesting. It's something that, you know, it is a bit mind-boggling myself. Something that kind of threw me off when I read about it. Now, D. Wills, you're a hip-hop aficionado in the truest sense of the terms. You've had a chance to watch Hologram Tupac do his thing. Can he hold a candle to the real Pac?
It was incredible. I watched it late, thought I was hallucinating. It was an incredible performance, well put together. I watched the entire set in terms of Dr. Dre and the whole thing. I think the whole production, when you watch it in its totality, and if you Google it, try to watch the entire set, because that sets it up really nice. But it was a little weird to watch it, because it was real. I mean, the mannerisms, everything. You know, Snoop did a good job of going back and forth. So it was an incredible, incredible time.
It got me to thinking, watching the whole thing take place. If we could, you know, hologram a former sports great, you know, off the top of your dome, who are you going to hologram and kind of bring back to watch him play for a little bit and watch him kind of go at it with a younger stud today? Who would you hologram?
Oh, that's a good one. Now we have to assume that this person is passed away, right?
You can just say they're not in their prime anymore. They don't have to be passed away, but they're not in their prime anymore.
Okay. Because we heard so much about him, and, you know, we did our top 50, I'd love to see Oscar Robertson play against some of the younger folks. You know, this is a guy that averaged almost a triple-double over his first 5 years. If you looked at his statistics totally, that would be really nice to see the Big O play today. When you hear people tell stories, they talk about how incredible he was and how strong he was, and whether or not that would translate in the day. And then the other person I would love to see, because I just love him, is George Gervin. Just in the open style, getting up and down the court. Of today, George coming through the lane. I'd love to see Gerv.
Yeah, me myself, I would lean towards the unstoppable force known as Wilt Chamberlain. I would really, really love to see him go against the current big men in the NBA, Dwight Howard, the Tim Duncans, some of the great big men in the league right now. I would really enjoy seeing him and watching how his style would translate today, how he would, you know, how he would fit in amongst today's NBA big men, and the impact he would have on the game, being such a dominant offensive force, to see how dominant he could be in today's context, because we constantly debate his dominance, because you look at his numbers, and his numbers are video game numbers.
That's right. That's right.
So to see what kind of an impact and what kind of numbers would he put up in today's context, to me, that would be extremely exciting to see. Another guy who, if I could hologram, and again, he's not deceased, he's not with it, he hasn't passed, but I would love to hologram a healthy Bo Jackson. I got to see Bo, but I didn't get to see enough of Bo as a child. You know, as a real youngster, I got to see some of Bo. some of Bo Jackson's game, some of the amazing things he did on the baseball diamond. But to just think about what he was doing at that time, being an all-star caliber player in two sports, in today's specialized athletic world, that is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
At least it doesn't seem possible. I won't say it's not possible, but it's something that we probably won't see again. There's a chance, but we probably won't see it again. The guy that came closest to being able to do that in recent memory was Ronald Curry. You remember Ronald Curry?
Yeah.
You know, he was the number one high school basketball player, number one high school football player in the same year.
Yeah.
Came out, went to North Carolina, tried to do both, and never really hit in either one. He did make it to the NFL and caught on as a wide receiver. His natural position was quarterback, but he never really took off at either one because I think they're just so demanding. But I would love to see Bo Jackson hologram right now and watch him running through a defense. Him and Ray Lewis meeting 5 yards into the hole. You know what I mean? That's something I'd love to see him and Ray go at it. So that's another guy I'd love to hologram.
But, yeah, I mean, along those lines, I mean, you know, he doesn't he gets more notary for what he did in terms of legal issues and dealing with particularly one of the landmark cases of all time. But, you know, O.J. Simpson, I don't think people had a real good understanding of how dominant he was as a runner and how much ease he ran with his ability to cut back. You know, it had, you know, basically, you know, kind of that world-class speed. But as a football player, his vision, his ability to see that instinct of knowing where to go and that effortless, that would be one. And the other one would be Gale Sayers. I mean, he had a short career, but by all accounts was very dominant in the punt return game as well as in his position as a running back. He's another one that would be, you know, interesting to see how he would fare as a hologram.
So, yeah, those are some guys that we hologram today. The reason we're having this conversation, if you didn't catch us earlier on with the Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, realsportsguys.com. This past weekend at Coachella, the music festival in California, the very wild and crazy music festival out in California, someone created a hologram version of Tupac, which performed Hail Mary, performed Ain't Nothing But a Gangster Party with Snoop. It's just a really interesting event for any hip-hop head. So, you know, it got me to thinking, what if we could hologram some sports greats? I'd hologram Ali, too, and put him in a ring with Mayweather. I know that wouldn't be a fair fight, but I'd do it. You know, I'd definitely do it because I want to see that Mayweather get his head beat in, and I think Ali would definitely give him the beating I've been wanting to see him get.
We definitely have to get to that later.
So, we're going to have our first guest come on with us. I'm going to pass it off to D. Wills and allow you to intro our first guest and kind of take us through everything. D. Wills, the stage is yours, my man.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we've tried to do with RSG is to catch some of the rising stars in coaching. Tonight we have one of the outstanding coaches, I would say, at any level of college football. He's the head coach of the Division III football national champions, University of Wisconsin-Whitewater Warhawks, where he's had a 72-3 record over the past 5 years. He has three consecutive national championships has just had an incredible run at Whitewater. Let's give a warm RSG welcome to Coach Lance Leipold. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing well tonight. It's a pleasure to be with you guys. Thank you very much for having me.
Coach, I mean, I don't know where to begin with your success, but you have a record seven consecutive conference championships. The program has been to the Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl seven consecutive times. 44-game winning streak, which is fifth longest in NCAA history. Talk to us about how you have been able to kind of maintain this focus and keep your players motivated, understanding that these are not players who are on scholarship. How do you keep that level of excellence?
Well, I think one of the first things that we're awful proud of, I'd say from a head coaching position, is I think the job that our assistant coaches have done. You know, they stayed motivated and stayed focused, and I think the latter part of staying focused is what they've been able to translate to our players. And most of our coaches have been coaching in our league for a while. It's a very competitive, we feel, the strongest conference in Division III football. We're made up of all state universities with, large enrollments. There's not Division II football or football championship subdivision in this state of Wisconsin. And we feel there's a good talent level of players left. So with that, we know that each and every week can be very competitive, and we've from those of us that played in the league and those of us that have coached for a while, we know that we've been beaten by almost every team along the way sometime in our career. So that focus of having to be ready each and every Saturday has been, you know, emphasized to our players, and I think they've really bought into that.
You have an incredible player in Lavelle Coppedge. Rushed for over 2,000 yards this season, and has been and done it in a way that has placed him third all time in terms of rushing leader in NCAA history. I mean, just an incredible player. Can you talk a little bit about Lavelle?
Well, Lavelle's been just an outstanding player for us in his 4 years, and we're going to definitely miss him as we head into the 2012 season. But Lavelle came on our campus, and, you know, after our first national championship in 2007, and we had an outstanding running back, and Justin Bieber won the Gagliardi Award, which is Division III Player of the Year, and everyone wondered what we were going to do to move on and replace him. And Lavelle Coppedge from the suburbs of Chicago came to UW-Whitewater and established himself right away as a starter as a freshman and really never looked back. He had a slight ankle injury in the playoffs of his freshman year. He missed about 3.5 games. But other than that, stayed extremely healthy in his career. He's a little over 5'7", about 185 pounds, but great vision, great quickness, and I think one of the only backs ever to be a four-time all-conference player and four-time over 1,000 yards in the regular season in 2,000-yard seasons made him just really a special back. And at the Division III level, definitely a difference maker and a key reason why we were able to win these last three national championships.
One of the things, reflecting on the run that you've had, Lavelle is obviously someone that people pay attention to, but can you talk a little bit about some of the other players who have been impact players on your team?
Oh, boy. You know, there's probably a lot of unsung guys, especially up front in our offensive line, and it's been real interesting up there. This year we replaced four of the five starters in our offensive line and still have maintained consistency. But I think this year's team especially, Matt Blanchard was our starting quarterback. Matt started his junior season for us, started 10 games, broke his thumb in the last regular season game, missed the whole playoffs, came back this year and led us to 15 victories. And 25 starts as a quarterback, I think he threw 40 touchdown passes and only 6 interceptions in his career. You know, just managed the game extremely well for us. This year, our middle linebacker, Greg Arnold, was a great leader of our, you know, he missed about 3 games, and we got him back in the last regular season game. It really led a defense through the playoffs where we had a giveaway takeaway. We created 15 turnovers in the postseason, only turned the ball over one time. Those were the type of leaders that we've had. The year before, Aaron Roosh was a wide receiver for us that, you know, to set the school's all-time leading receiving yards. Jeff Schrebler was an All-American kicker for us for three seasons, who was the NCAA leading scorer. And you know, and we've been fortunate, guys, with the amount of games that we've played. We've had many players, and so many to mention that have played 60 football games in their careers. And I think that's what's been really outstanding about what our whole program has been able to accomplish. Maybe not so many individuals, is that you know, it's one thing we've been able to sell in the recruiting aspect, is that if we're able to maintain what we've been doing, sometimes at the Division III level, a program may play 40 football games in a four-year period where, you know, we're one of the few schools that have been fortunate enough in Mount Union at our level that have played 60, and our kids have been able to really get two more years of playing time and been able to, you know, gain valuable experience. And then I guess a lot of times those things will show up statistically for our players as well.
Can you talk a little bit about the impact of your success on the community of Whitewater, Wisconsin? I think I don't know if people understand, and you talked a little bit about just the nature of college football in the state of Wisconsin, and the fact that you don't have you know, that high competition at the FBS level, and you play in a conference that is, you know, very competitive, but also there's an impact on the community. Can you talk a little bit about what your success has meant to the community?
Well, I think, you know, one thing with any community, I think that's one of the benefits of athletics at any level, is that, you know, the work ethic and the sacrifice that athletics has. And I think what, again, then when you're successful, I'm a little biased, of course, being a football coach, but what it can do to start a school year, you know, and what it can do for a campus when things go well to start your fall and those things, and kind of transition in the winter season and do those things. But I think in my 5 years back at Whitewater as an alum of the school, I've been, you know, I say this many times when I do some public speaking, is it makes me feel, you know, proud as an alum to see alums that have pride again in their university or reconnect with their university. I think that's something I think you would ask our development office, our alumni people that go out and meet people. I think that's one of the things our success has been able to do. There's also numbers that I've asked for from our admissions office. The years of our national championship, our first one, the next school year was our largest applicant pool to our university. And again, after these last three championships, it continues to rise. So I think, again, not solely because of our football program or athletics, but I think, again, it's been a positive. Our merchandising sales and things like that, for licensure product and things, those things have doubled since our first day bowl appearance. So, again, people want to buy, a Warhawk sweatshirt or T-shirt and again, to show the pride or the connection to it. So, again, those are little things that come across. But I think we have found on our campus that this is benefiting a lot of people and hopefully the university as a whole. And as you said, we led the nation in Division III attendance this year in the regular season, just over 8,000 people. Again, that's a lot of people coming into a smaller community on a Saturday for the small college level. So, I hope a lot of the people that help support us in a lot of different ways within the community, I hope those businesses as well profit from that as well.
You listen to The Real Sports Guys. We're on with Lance Leipold, head coach of the University of Wisconsin Whitewater Warhawks, the Division III national champions. This has been an incredible run with this program here on realsportsguys.com. And, Coach, you have really navigated through the coaching ranks. You spent time at UW-Madison and at Nebraska-Lincoln. How have your different coaching stops shaped your coaching philosophy?
Well, I think I feel definitely blessed that for the opportunities that have been given to me. Ended my playing career and I started to get involved in coaching here at UW-Whitewater, and then had a chance at a coaching clinic to meet Barry Alvarez and had an opportunity in his second season as head coach at Wisconsin to get on as a graduate assistant coach. And I think, from your foundation of what, anyone that's familiar with Badger football and, the ability to run the football, the physicality of the defense, and even that Big Ten mentality, I think has kind of been, ingrained in myself. And, from an offensive standpoint, in the running game of, the zone running game, which Wisconsin has been very successful at for many years, is, something that's been part of me. And when I moved down to Nebraska, Omaha, we implemented it there. As part of a rebuilding program at the University of Nebraska, Omaha, a program that had been down for a long time. We won one game in 1994, and by 1996, we had won 10 ball games. So Pat Burns was a man I worked for 10 years at two different stops and learned a lot from him. And a lot of what I do as a head coach, after being with one person for 10 years, you implement a lot of those things. And of course, you mentioned University of Nebraska at Lincoln as well. You know, they have the ability to be around a program with that type of tradition and just the way they go about business. And the one thing that I was in a non-coaching role there, kind of an administrative assistant, had a lot of I think they've changed a lot of those titles since then, but handling a lot of that on-campus recruiting activity, and that really, I think, helped me. Because a lot of times as a head coach, you have to take a step away from the X's and O's sometimes and run a program. And I think some of that has benefited me to delegate some things within our program, at the same time help move the program in the right directions that we've been able to keep doing what we're doing.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys. We're on with Lance Leipold, head coach of the University of Wisconsin Whitewater Warhawks. Coach, you're beginning the modified spring practice that you've already into. What are you seeing right now? What are some of the things you're working on here in the spring? Given what you said about your players, I mean, some of these players have had long seasons. When some of the other teams have been done for a month or so, your teams have been playing late into the season. How do you handle spring practice?
Well, I think the one thing about the long season first is that we haven't, we try to be smart anyway. People don't always think, head coaches are very smart. So our regular season, we have to be smart on how we practice and how we modify that. But you use the word modified, which I always kind of say too for Division III football. We're not allowed to use helmets or shoulder pads or any really football equipment other than a football. So what that really gets into is a lot of individual technique work, formations, alignments. You can work on routes and installation type, but it doesn't do a lot with the actual contact of what you see many times in spring football. And in the spring of 2007, I returned to Whitewater. I was like, what is this? I really didn't know what it was going to be about. I wasn't really aware of the rules back in when I was there. There wasn't even spring practice. But I think the unique thing about it that I liked it was we had about 80 guys out. Now we have about 100 out for spring practice. And, when you're a new coach and you got all these names and faces and then they put helmets on, it's hard to remember everybody. So the great thing about it was I could put faces with numbers right away. So that allowed me at least to learn the players really quickly. So that was good. But I've really come to enjoy this. It's very good because you do stay healthy. You do get to get some things done. Is it perfect? No, but at the same time, I like what we're able to get done. We talked earlier here about the length of our seasons, and those playoff practices have really been good for our younger players. And then when we step on the field here in April, I've really noticed that our retention has been really good because that long fall, we've been able to kind of move at a pretty good pace of installation and keep the terminology growing in our offense and defensive schemes. And then that really has helped us when we come back in August. So there's a lot of good about it. And the big thing is that, you might have a guy pull a muscle or something, but you don't have any of those real contact injuries that you have sometimes when you have normal spring practice.
Coach, can you talk a little bit about your incoming recruiting class and some of the players that you're looking to make an impact in 2012?
Well, I usually don't get a lot into names based on, you know, that they're all accepted in the school and everything,
mm-hmm.
because we don't
mm-hmm.
sign letters of intent. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've been able to – you know, we'll bring about 40 freshmen onto campus, and that's, you know, 35 to 40 has been usually the number that we deal with. We are limited in our conference with a 100-man roster, which, you know, a lot of times at Division III, smaller schools, private institutions, you know, football is also used as a recruiting for students, you know, and they have, you know, really large rosters. Well, us being a state institution and not you know, really having athletics for enrollment purposes, but just as a holistic to the college experience, we were limited through Title IX and other things to have a 100-man roster. But we're excited. We're able to our recruiting base is about 2 hours around, you know, Whitewater. We're about an hour from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, hour from Madison, Wisconsin. We go up what's called the Fox Valley, up through Appleton and Green Bay. We have a good alumni base there, and some excellent football played up through that way. And then we go down towards Chicago into the suburbs of Chicago and kind of hit there. Anything else that really comes our way is probably someone that's seeking themselves to UW-Whitewater. Maybe athletically now that we've been able to be on national television, but more than likely there's an academic reason that they want to. And out of those 40 players, we're probably 50-50 this year with Wisconsin and Illinois recruits. And we're excited about that and feel that we're able to address our needs and that, finding offensive and defensive linemen are difficult at every level I've been at to make sure you have enough depth there. Yeah. But we feel real excited about the quality of skilled athletes and the athleticism that we have at the skill positions as well.
And Coach, I mean, you talk a little bit. I'm very familiar with, Division III football and through my own personal experience. You know, there are always players who had the option. For some reason, they could think about going to junior college or Division II or whatever, but for some reason they decide, you know, Division III is a better fit. How do you talk to those players about the value of coming to play Division III football and what that means to their kind of their student kind of athlete experience?
Well, I think again, it's, you know, we're very rarely going to put someone in the NFL, and so again, when somebody elects to do it, we may be even in our conference. Again, I've talked about some of the uniqueness of what we do is that, you know, our players buy their own shoes. I tell people they have to write a check to come to Two A Days, the fall camp, to pay for their meals. So if they're going to do it, they must really want to do it. But I think all those things that any athlete goes through, the time commitment, the work, in preparation, and then to come to fall camp and do those things, it's just not about what happens on Saturdays in the athletic, you know, arena, so to speak, whether or not we win or lose or they score touchdowns. I think they're developing life skills and work ethic and teamwork and all that, the sacrifices that you have to make. But at the same time, at the Division III level, I think they have to maintain that balance and make sure that they're on top of academics as they're preparing, because there isn't all that academic support that sometimes are at bigger institutions. And we don't have a full staff of 9 assistant full-time coaches and strength coaches and all these things that sometimes can make it an individual one-on-one opportunity for our guys. So a lot of it has to be that they handle these things on their own, they mature on and off the field, and still leave with an outstanding experience.
Well, Coach, we certainly enjoyed having you on Real Sports Guys. And, you know, what I would like to do is I'd love to have you come back during the season next year. And I'm sure you're going to be in the playoffs, but we'd love to have you come back and talk about your team and the success at that point. So hopefully you'll come back and join us.
Well, first of all, hopefully we can be in the playoffs. We got to make sure we keep taking it one at a time. But it, you know, we're definitely honored as a program to be on your show, and we would be pleased to do it anytime. And feel free to give us a holler again. And I look forward to visiting with all of you again here this coming fall.
All right. Well, good luck with your spring practice, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, Coach.
Thank you very much.
That was Coach Lance Leipold, head coach, University of Wisconsin-Whitewater Warhawks, national champions for this year in Division III. I believe it may have been four consecutive championships, but he has had an incredible record as a coach. And one of the things that we'd like to do is bring what we believe are rising stars in coaching. And we're looking everywhere to finally share it with you because that's the nature of who we are. So, Game Changer, I know you were sitting on the sidelines listening to the interview. I know you're very familiar with UW system and the sports, and particularly the Division III sports. What was your thoughts in terms of the interview?
Well, you know, Coach talked about, and again, thanks to Coach Leipold for joining us. But Coach talked about some real interesting aspects of the Division III culture in Wisconsin in particular. You know, I've grown up in Wisconsin, and, you know, as he highlighted, there are no, you know, 1A schools or 1AA schools. Wisconsin is the only 1A school in football. There's no 1AA programs, no Division II programs. So in sports like both football and basketball, where you don't have a ton of options, the WIAC, which is the main Division III conference, is really like a Division II conference, you know, as far as the athletic quality. The players and the athletes that they get are a lot of kids who could go further from home and play Division II ball, but they want to stay in state. So because of that, they get a lot of quality athletes, and there are a lot of places in Wisconsin where there is some good football being played, and I think their success is a reflection of that, as he talked about his roster being pretty much 50-50 kids from Illinois, kids from Wisconsin. You know, he is positioned in a place where he can pull kids from, you know, the Chicago suburbs. He can get kids out of Milwaukee. He can get kids out of, you know, Madison, the Fox Valley area. And then that area surrounding Whitewater is also rich with football talent. So, you know, he's got that program turning like a machine right now. And there's no reason that, you know, you can't continue to see that level of dominance. When I liken what the WIAC is in football, it's a lot in Division III. It's a lot like a Big Ten or an SEC as far as the teams in that, the winner of that conference oftentimes is a major player on the national scene. If you can win the WIAC in Wisconsin, you have, and at the Division III level, you have a good chance of being a team that is going to be a top five team, a national championship caliber team, in a lot of sports, and not just football, but also in basketball. They have some great baseball programs in the WIAC. Just a very rich tradition of strong sports at the Division III level in that conference.
And Whitewater particularly has been strong in many sports. It was, I believe, their basketball team won the national championship. We're hoping to have Coach Miller on as well. He's the kind of person that could be another Bo Ryan type working up through the system. Bo Ryan started out in that conference as a coach. You know, folks like Terry Porter, who many of our listeners out there would know. You know, Terry Porter is a dominant guard in the league. That's where he played college basketball. There's a legacy within that conference, and that's why, you know, on the Real Sports Guys, we bring these things to. These are gems. These are things that, you know, some of you hardcore sports fans, you know, we're looking under rocks, understanding that there's a lot going on in sports today.
Yeah, and if you're a parent out there, you're looking for a good university Division III. If you have an athlete, you know, that you're raising who's a Division III level athlete, and you're looking for a quality school, look at some of those WIAC schools. Again, there's quality athletics there across the board, very competitive, one of the best conferences athletics-wise in the nation, hands down. I don't care what part of the country you go to, you talk about the WIAC, they're going to know teams from it. and they're going to know the quality of talent that exists there and the quality program that they have.
And one of the things about Coach Leipold, his preparation in the way in which he approaches his preparation is part of his secret sauce. If you have a chance to go on YouTube, actually one of the students there did a project on, you know, what it takes to build a champion. Just kind of talking about his week of preparation, how he approaches things, how he gets after that pedigree that he has in terms of all the stops he's made along the line are adding up to this. But you cannot, I mean, when you think about his record as a coach in a very difficult conference, as Game Changers pointed out, I mean, 72-3. That you can't. I don't.
That's ridiculous. It really is. I know the listeners out there who aren't from Wisconsin don't understand that, but it is extremely difficult to do in that conference because it is such a deep, deep conference. But yeah, that he's got, like I said, he's got the ball rolling. It means a lot to that community. It means a lot to that area of the state. It brings a sense of pride. And you know, when you're in a small town like a Whitewater, Wisconsin, and you have a program like that, it really does become a community, grassroots, really grounded thing where everyone in the community is really engaged. They're contributing in their own way by showing up to games, by, like as he said, buying sweatshirts, you know, calling people that they know and really kind of encouraging kids around the area to work to get to UW-Whitewater and really looking at it as a viable option for their own children to be a part of. And everybody wants to be a part of it. And once you have that going, man, that's the fuel that keeps the machine humming right there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how you build a program, how you build winners, you know, this is a classic example of how you do it, and these things are transferable. This is a coach that you're going to hear more about in the future.
Yeah, I want to pull PAZ in real quick because he just jumped back in. PAZ, any real quick reflections on what you heard from Coach Leipold?
I want winners.
I agree. I was going to hit the button myself.
I tell you what, fellas, you know, I just got off the phone with Coach Leipold, quality guy. You know, and I told him, hey, 72-3 over five seasons, you guys are putting up video game numbers. You know, in NCAA football 2012 on the PS3, I don't think I can go 72-3 on the easiest setting on the video game. So, you know, hats off. I'm extremely impressed with what they're doing. They're doing it the right way. The kids are buying in. You know, Devon and I and Marcus, we were all Texan when they were in the national championship, you know, this past winter. So, I mean, I certainly see the connection to the city, and I mean, it's just so impressive what they're getting done. And, you know, I mean, this is one of the reasons that we started this show, to be able to highlight the great coaches across the country. And there's no doubt that Coach Leipold is one of the best coaches in the business, regardless of the division.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Well said. So our second interview of the night, we interview Coach Bill Curry from Georgia State football. He spent some time with the Real Sports guys. So we're going to get into that interview. I want you to take a listen and see what he had to say.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys Radio on RealSportsGuys.com. We have a real treat here for our listeners today. Bill Curry, the head coach for the Georgia State football program, is here. Coach Curry has had a decorated career on and off the field. Coach Curry was an All-Pro several times in the NFL, where he played center for some of the great quarterbacks ever, Johnny Unitas with the Colts, as well as Bart Starr with the Packers. Coach also won championships with these two franchises when those teams were led by Coach Lombardi and Coach Shula. After his playing career was over, Coach stepped into the coaching ranks, where he has had stops as the head coach at Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia Tech. Currently, he's at Georgia State. Let's welcome Coach Curry to the Real Sports Guys. How you doing today, Coach?
Doing great. How are you?
Coach, we're doing great. We're so looking forward to talking to you. Let's just jump in. At Georgia State, you're heading into your third year here, and you all just finished up spring practice. Tell us about some compelling things that happened during your practice.
Well, a lot of compelling things happen at spring practice, but they aren't always compelling to the public. I mean, it's hard to get people fired up about Oklahoma drill, but we did a lot of that. A lot of hitting just to develop our younger players and the stuff with keeping your head up and getting off blocks and tackling well. Most injuries occur in football that are serious injuries when people have their head down. So we spent a whole spring about keeping our head up and blocking and tackling. And again, that's not very interesting to the public. What is interesting is quarterback duels. And we had a competition for the quarterback position. Kelton Hill had been the starter in our last five games last year. Bo Schlechter had started a couple of games earlier in the year. And then Ben McClain was a redshirt freshman who was coming out for his first spring, having joined us a year ago from Brookwood High School, where he led his team to the 5A state championship. And Ben came through as the most consistent and the best prepared quarterback in the spring. So going into the summer workout, Ben McClain is in the top spot in the QB position. And there was a lot of it.
Coach, what do you look for in your quarterbacks?
Stability, somebody who's reliable, who is tough and smart, who does what he's supposed to, who goes to class, who's honest in his dealings with the team, who earns respect by his work ethic, who understands the offense and memorizes the formations, and understands also how to respond with the very rapid-fire defensive deployments and changes that offenses face these days. And then, frankly, somebody that can produce in the clutch, that can throw it with accuracy to the right place, that can make changes at the line of scrimmage very quickly to go from run to pass or pass to run. All those things that are so fundamental to today's quarterback, that's what you have to have. It's a whole different position than it was just a few years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, this all began to change into something that's more complicated and more demanding.
Coach, you came on board at Georgia State 4 years ago, and at that point they had no football program. You helped build that program to when you all had your first game in 2010, and you all had a winning season, which was amazing for your first year. It made national news. We read the ESPN, the magazine story. Coach, can you discuss some of the key moments, turning points that has helped and aided the building process of this program?
Well, this is going to sound strange because I'm going to go back before the first season.
Okay.
People refer to the first season because that was the season we competed for the first time. We started the program in 2008. We did not have a football. We did not have a pinstrap. And I had people grabbing me every day saying, when are we going to be FBS? When are we going to play the Bulldogs and the Yellow Jackets? Said, whoa, we ain't got a pinstrap yet. And seriously, in 2009, after we had signed our first class of recruits, we could not find a practice field. We did not have a place to conduct a football practice. So George Steele and I, one of my assistants, rode up and down the freeways. I'm not kidding about this. Looking for high school football fields, or maybe Atlanta University field like Morris Brown, to see if we could talk to people and let us practice there. That's some of the most interesting stuff that went on before we ever had anybody report to the campus. Then once we had the guys report, we practiced the entire season, 2009, without playing a game. So how about that for a recruiting pitch? Come practice football with us 60 times, but you're not going to play a game all year. Man, that's fun. So that's stuff that people don't realize that we went through. And then we were a gritty, scrappy team our first year. We managed to eke out 6 wins. Our second year we came back and we were more talented, but we weren't as gritty. We weren't as tough as we should have been. So we went 3-8. What people forget is you can change 3 plays in the first year and we would have been 3-8. And you could change three plays in our second year, and we would have been 6-5, just like we were the first year. So it's such a narrow margin, losing and winning. And that's what a lot of people have had to learn about football around here. We knew that, and we didn't want to learn it the hard way, but you're going to go through some hard times if you build a program in this sport.
Coach, you touched on it just a few seconds ago about recruiting and some of the challenges with the new program and inaugural program. Can you talk about your recruiting philosophy and how it's different from when you were at Alabama or Kentucky versus how it is right now at Georgia State?
Well, when you're coaching when you're recruiting to a major university, there are built-in advantages. You have a tradition. You don't have to worry about if you're going to have a practice. You really don't have to worry about expenses. And unfortunately, a lot of the colleges have taken that approach and haven't paid enough attention to expenses, so that now some of the more prestigious programs are in serious financial straits, and I mean serious. So that can be a two-edged sword. But we had to worry about every detail. We had to wonder how we were going to buy equipment. It just makes you more attentive to the small things when you're trying to establish something like this. And we've all had to learn. I've made so many mistakes. I've made more mistakes than I have done things correctly. And that's the learning process. So hopefully everybody has picked up on the things that we need to do going forward. And I know this, eventually Georgia State will be an outstanding football program. Just that we've got to keep the hard work going in every area.
Listen to Real Sports Guys at realsportsguys.com. We're chatting with Georgia State's head football coach, Bill Curry. Coach, talk about some key players on your team that are important for you all to have a successful season this coming fall.
Well, when I start thinking about key players, I think about academics, because that's our order of priority here. You say faith, family, and then finishing your education, and then football, fun, those five things in that order. So faith, we're a public institution, so we don't preach a specific faith, but we think each of our players ought to have a relationship with higher power. We talk about family, meaning the people that got you here. That's your aunt and uncle, fine. That's your grandmother. But whoever your family is, people that fed you and clothed you so you could get to college, you owe them responsibility. And then academics, to finish your education. So the reliable players are people like Jordan Giles, who's a real playmaker on the offensive side of the ball. Dan Williams, another guy. Albert Wilson, all guys, the offensive players that are receivers, but they're also slot backs. They can come across the middle and catch the ball and run away from you. They can run over you. They're tough as nails. Those are guys that are going to figure very prominently in our offense. Donald Russell, our tailback, is an outstanding player. He's a transfer from Kentucky. Those are all guys that take care of their business in the classroom and also get the job done on the field. On defense, we are really proud of Jamarius Matthews, who's going into his third year. He's a corner, and he's going to be outstanding for us. Brent McClendon is another corner that has performed well in our spring ball. And then we've got some young defensive linemen, people like C.J. Stevens, that are going to have to grow up and come through for us. We're counting on them as well. So that's just a few.
There's been a lot of talk about the conference realignment and how much things have changed related to football, and some of the traditional matchups are now changing. What are your thoughts to all this conference realignment that's going on in college football?
Well, in today's business climate, and let's not kid ourselves, this is a business. It's inevitable that there was going to be a coming together of various economic and tradition units of football. By that I mean the economic and traditional powers, the Ohio State, Florida, Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas, Notre Dame, that ilk program. It was inevitable that they were going to expand their numbers because they could then sell more of their products to the TV networks and attract larger and larger crowds. It has become as much an economic game and a facilities expansion game as it is a football game. Well, that trickles down so that smaller programs like us are put in a position either you stay at a lower level and chug along and do the best you can there, or you shoot the moon and try to join the powers. And so we have done that. We studied the economics of being in a conference that was more southeastern oriented than the Colonial Athletic Association. And so as much as we admire and love those people, the Colonial is the best football conference in FCS by far, we felt like we could not overlook this opportunity to move up to FCS level because of the economic reality. Not just the money that might come in, but what it costs to travel to try to get our teams, our non-revenue teams, to various venues is another big factor. So all those things go into those decisions. And you see universities trying to be responsible, and it's not easy, but everybody's doing it, and we feel like we were very fortunate to get a chance to do that.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on RealSportsGuys.com. We have the pleasure of chatting with Coach Bill Curry, the head coach of Georgia State's football program. Coach, on the Real Sports Guys, we talk a lot about the state of college sports and the amateur status of college athletes. What suggestions would you make to ensure that athletes are able to fully engage academically and socially in the college life while still playing sports at a high level?
Well, I've had to learn this the hard way about this generation. I was out of coaching for 11 years, working at ESPN and working at some other places. This generation really wants you to explain why the program does what it does. You don't just sit this group down and say, okay, you're going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5A and 5B and 5C. Don't ask questions. Keep your mouth shut. Do what you're supposed to. If you do that with this generation, you are not going to connect with them in a manner that gets what the kind of performance, the kind of attention to detail that you really need to get a great education. You got to sit down and explain, look, if you go to class and if you go to tutoring and you do it this way, the benefits are going to be enormous. And here are the benefits of having a college degree from Georgia State University, and explain the whole process and then stay with the young person, because this generation is used to getting quick explanations to get them off of technology, to get them off of Twitter, get them off of Facebook, and they read a lot of wacky stuff. So we have to compete with that, and we have to get the right information, quality information, so that they understand that education is more important than ever, much more important than having a name on Facebook.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys at RealSportsGuys.com. We had the pleasure of talking to Georgia State's head football coach, Bill Curry. Coach Curry, you had a decorated career in the NFL. You were all pro numerous times. You had the pleasure of being the center for John Unitas as well as Bart Starr. You won NFL championships with Coach Shula and Lombardi. Can you talk a little bit about your experience being an NFL player, playing with those caliber players and playing for those caliber coaches?
Well, I can hardly believe it. Looking back on it, I was so stunned when I got there. I didn't expect it. I could not have said it in my dreams. What I really dreamed about was I would have pitched for the New York Yankees, and I wasn't good enough to do that. So I ended up in this other sport. At one time, I didn't even like football, but if somebody had told me I was going to get to play for those great coaches, and to snap the ball to some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, I would have been mystified. So it was just like a dream. It was wonderful, and what a blessing. And it was a lot of hard work, and it was a lot of broken noses and all the stuff that goes with being an NFL player, but it was such a joy to be on those teams with those great human beings. And some of them are not living anymore, sadly, but the ones who are have remained friends forever. And that's the thing I remember most is the great bond that was formed with our team, and it's never gone away. That's the best part.
Coach Curry, there's been a lot of stuff in the news lately here about player safety at all levels of football, specifically the NFL. What's your stance in regards to player safety issues, specifically regarding this NFL bounty situation with the New Orleans Saints?
Well, if I'm a coach of your son, it doesn't matter if it's Little League, high school, college, or the National Football League. If your son plays football on my team and I'm the head coach, my number one responsibility in my life is to be sure that your son's safety is paramount in our plan. If I'm playing against your son, my number one obligation is to try to teach my players to play hard and knock the stuffings out of people within the rules, but to be sure that nobody intentionally tries to hurt anybody else. Ever. First responsibility of the football team. And that answers all the questions about bounty systems and trying to tear somebody's ACL or trying to test them to see if they got a concussion. Yeah, they got a concussion, and now you're going to get another one. And what is that somebody's son you're talking about? It's unbelievable that we could have ever come to this. But I'm glad it's been brought out into the public eye, and I'm glad it's been dealt with.
Coach, a couple of weeks ago, we had Ramoke Yuma on. He's the president of the National College Players Association. He's a key advocate for players' rights, especially at the college level. You know, earlier, we briefly talked about how to keep students engaged. What are your thoughts on college athletes being treated as amateurs versus professionals?
Well, the thing you have to remember about college sports, I think, first and foremost, is that there are 400,000 NCAA athletes. 99% of those will be professionals in something other than a sport. There's an NCAA commercial on television that says it exactly like that, and that's where I got that. That's the truth. There'll be doctors, lawyers, teachers, etc. There are a couple of revenue pools, football and basketball. There are folks who suggest that the people who go out and generate those hundreds of millions of dollars are not really amateurs, they're just professionals that are not getting paid. And there is that's the truth. That's right. They're not getting paid a salary. They are getting paid with tutoring, direction by coaches, academic monitoring. They're getting a great education if they're willing to go to class and do what they're supposed to. So it's not as if they were coming out of this with nothing. If you decide to pay the athlete, if there is a stipend that comes from the revenue sports, then it must include the non-revenue sports. So is there enough money to go around to pay the women's lacrosse team and the rowing team and the field hockey team and the volleyball team and the sand volleyball team and the softball team? I think that is the realistic assessment of where that money would need to go when you consider Title IX implications. And before you know it, there's not enough money. Does that make it morally okay to not pay these guys and put their images on billboards and lose hundreds of thousands and maybe millions of dollars for the institution? No, it's not okay. To pay some coach $4 million, I don't think that's okay. But that is the American free enterprise system, and that's what we've got. And I think it's going to be very difficult to change it.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We're chatting with Bill Curry, the head coach at Georgia State University. Coach Curry, one of the reasons that we so much respect you here at Real Sports Guys Radio is because of the work that you do off the field. Can you talk to us a little bit about your Magna Nimitan program?
Yeah, that's a fancy word. I was working at Baylor School in Chattanooga, and that's an independent school that's over 100 years old. And I noticed etched in stone as you leave the campus, the word Magna Nimitas. So I didn't know what it meant. So I went to somebody and said, what's that Magna Nimitas? And it took me a week to learn how to pronounce it. M-A-G-N-A-N-I-N-I-T-A-S, Magna Nimitas. Well, it's the theme for the Baylor School from its founder, Dr. Baylor, many years ago, 1926. He wrote an essay, a letter to his students. He said, your magna nimitas, or your greatness of spirit, is the most important thing about you. Every human being has greatness of spirit. And the Latin word magna nimitas means greatness of spirit. So our job with our student athletes, for anybody we work with, whether it's a youth group or an alcohol and drug counseling group. Our job is to help each person locate her or his monumental time, their spirit, develop it, and then give it to a cause greater than yourself. Give it to your team. Give it to your university. Give it to your church or your synagogue. Whatever it is that is important to you is greater than your own self-esteem. You learn to give that, and that is what team sport offers.
Coach, it's been great chatting with you again. Bill Curry, head coach of Georgia State. Coach, we're going to be rooting for you this season. We think you and your program are certainly heading in the right direction. And again, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, again, it's Bill Curry of Georgia State. We're going to send it back to the studio.
So that was Bill Curry, head coach of Georgia State, that chatted with us earlier today. Fellas, Coach Curry, again, this is a guy who coached at Alabama, was the SEC Coach of the Year. Same thing when he was in the ACC with Georgia Tech. Also had time in Kentucky, all-pro NFL football player, played for some of the legends. And now he's at Georgia State rebuilding or building that program. He covered a lot of stuff, fellas, but let's first talk about Georgia State and what he's building down there. D. Wills, what were your thoughts on the building process down there at Georgia State?
I mean, part of it is, I think what was great is just about the decision-making process of where to place the program. Was interesting when he talked about, coming into the FBS and what that meant to try to just be a part of big-time college football and what that means to the rest of the budget. But then, you know, the idea of convincing players to practice. When you think about the practice and not play, and so when you think about – I thought that was the most amazing part of the story because many of the young people today have an immediate gratification. But for these players, they had to really put it off for a season. And to me, that's an amazing recruiting job. It says a lot about who he is. I mean, when he speaks, you just know you can play for him. Part of being able to sell a program and build a program is being able to sell a vision. And for him to sell the idea that you're going to play, you're going to practice and not play games, to me, that's the most amazing part of the building process for me. When I first heard it, I just thought that was incredible.
Game changer. What were your thoughts?
Just listening to him tell that story and tell the story of how he took a program from really nothing and not having footballs, not having a practice field, and really built it up to a point where they're on the cusp of becoming a FBS team. They're in a very fertile territory out there in SEC country, though they're not an SEC team. You know, he talked about them playing against people asking, when are we going to play the Bulldogs? When are we going to play the Yellow Jackets? To add a third school into that mix is going to be a lot of, you know, that area prides itself on the competition. And that area of the country is football crazy because of the competition of the schools involved. And now you have kind of a third party kind of throwing their hat in the ring. It's going to be a very interesting dynamic, and knowing where Georgia State came from, it's going to make it very fun to watch them continue to develop as they get ready to transition into the Sun Belt Conference, which is a tough conference when you have, you know, a Troy, who is always a very good team. Louisiana Tech has had some good teams in the past. So it's not an easy conference to win in, but they can go into that conference and begin to build a resume and build up a reputation. You know, maybe they become a southern version of a Boise State or a southern version of a TCU that, again, begins to make some inroads into the ACC. Or, you know, maybe they become a Big East team and help fill out the rest of that conference. Or maybe they move into the SEC. Who knows how it all play out for them, but it's interesting to have another kind of a wild card, another chip out there on the table as we see all this realignment happening.
So, D. Wills, you know, one of the things that was most impressive to me, you know, and it made national news, their first season ever in 2010, they messed around and got a winning record. They're in a bowl. Wasn't that pretty impressive?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about that quick of a turnaround, but I think part of it is, you know, I think part of having Coach Curry is he knows what it looks like, right? He knows what the finished product looks like, and he knows how to get there in terms of doing that. I mean, one of the funniest things early on, the Oklahoma drill, did you hear that one? I mean,
absolutely. He
knows what it takes to build a winner, and for him to take on something like this is incredible. And to do it in a shorter period of time is because he knows what the steps you need to do to build a winner. And I think that has a lot to do with him and his staff and how you and the dedication of these players and the commitment to the vision.
So, you know, one of the things that was really impressive, and you can't help but be in awe of Bill Curry with everything that he has accomplished. He started talking about the conference realignment. I thought it was pretty interesting, the process that Georgia State went through. And I'm mistaken, they're moving up to FBSS or FBS now. What did you guys, Marcus, what did you think about the whole process of them picking their conference and then deciding, you know, to go FBS?
To me, it seems like a natural progression. If you're going to begin to really invest in a football program at that level, you want to get to the FBS. You want to get to the Bowl Championship Series. You know, D1, 1A Division I football is what we all know it as. But that's where you want to get to. And with the realignment, it kind of opens the door for some of it's almost a motivating factor if you're one of these smaller programs. If you get your act together and you can really develop a program, now more than ever, you have a shot to move into a power conference because everybody's looking for that next chip that's going to help them continue to expand. So if you can have something that, you know, is a power chip, you know, being in Atlanta, right in the heart of Georgia, right in the heart of SEC country, that's a big bonus for that program. And if they can build the proper facilities and build the proper atmosphere and get the community engaged and get people coming out to games, that is really going to be a major plus for them as far as building their brand and branding themselves and opening up some doors for them to take advantage of what's going on right now with everybody kind of reshuffling themselves and repositioning themselves. As I said before, you know, I could see them, because it's going to be hard for the other Georgia schools. I don't think Georgia is going to want another Georgia school in the SEC at some point, and I don't think Georgia Tech is going to want another Georgia school in the ACC. So if they play it right, they can position themselves as a school that enters into the Big East, as a Georgia school of the Big East, which allows the Big East to expand further south. That's a move that they could make in the future. So, you know, I know he's really big on tradition, but I think, you know, tradition is important right now. But he said it himself, it's a business first, and when it comes time to make a business move, I think they're gonna have to push aside tradition to a point and look at how they can position themselves to have this thing continue to grow so they can continue to build tradition.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys Radio on realsportsguys.com. We just listened to an interview from Bill Curry, the legendary Bill Curry, who is currently the head coach at Georgia State. In about 10 minutes, we're going to shift to the NBA. We've got our NBA analyst, Justin Page, on the line, and he'll be coming in shortly. You know, fellas, Coach Curry talked a bit about his position on the NFL bounty. Devon, what were your thoughts on his reaction and position on what's going on with the Saints?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, in what he said, you know, regardless of what level, you know, really being responsible for, you know, the well-being of players is very important. This is triggering a lot of conversation across all levels of football around player safety and health. You know, the commitment to ensuring that you have a safe environment as much as you can in a violent game. And he played in one of the most violent times when you're talking about the level of equipment versus, you know, having several broken nose, you know, playing center, in a very physical kind of atmosphere, but playing hard and playing clean is going to be very important. So, you know, this is something obviously is a ripple effect at all levels of football.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys at RealSportsGuys.com. We had Coach Curry on, and he also had an opinion on student-athletes, whether they should be paid or not and what that would look like. Game changer. What were your thoughts on Coach Curry's comments there?
Yeah, for me, I didn't see eye to eye with Coach Curry. I respect him. I respect his opinion. I respect his perspective. You know, you said it in the queue. He said off air he's an old school cat, and I think that rings true in his comments. But I think I just have a hard time believing that, or trusting in a system that claims to be offering an education when I know the quality of engagement that the athletes get to experience is tempered by their commitments to their athletic program. And he may have a different structure the way he runs his programs, but I know a lot of programs around the country take advantage of the fact that these young men are not really interested in academics rather than really pushing them to become more engaged in their academics. You know, he has a very different perspective, and I applaud that perspective. It's a very noble perspective. But I would say that I would say he's definitely in the minority as far as college coaches go.
D. Wills, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better than the game changing Marcus. I think he hit it right on the head that where I think, and this is what separates someone like Coach Curry and what the reason why I followed him and respect him in terms of his understanding and importance of really pushing young men. I mean, all college students, not just football players, have to be pushed outside their comfort zone. This happens with non-athletes on college campuses. But I think there are times when we're reluctant to push athletes into these to areas that will make them uncomfortable in part of their learning experience. And so I certainly agree with the fact that, as Marcus said, that not all coaches come with that perspective and that understanding about how they will engage their athletes. And therefore, we have to have a system that says we're going to reinforce this concept of being a student athlete. And there are ways in which you can do that, but we need to really push that a little further. And if we can replicate more Coach Curry's, then I think we would have a better experience for our student athletes. But as Marcus said, that's certainly not the case right now.
So we're just wrapping up our conversation and reflection and reaction to the interview we had with the head coach of Georgia State, Coach Bill Curry, a true legend in the world of coaching and football and sport. We apologize for the audio issues we have with Coach Curry's interview, but if you want to listen to the interview in better quality, feel free to download it in iTunes starting tomorrow. Again, we're just wrapping up our conversation with Bill Curry. We're going to transition on now to basketball. The NBA playoff run is heating up, and we have none other than Justin Page on the line to help us break it down. How you doing today, JP?
Fellas, I'm great, man. Glad to be here. I've been resting my voice all week. I haven't yelled at my kids in 24 hours. I'm ready to go.
We love that energy. We love that energy. So let's get going. I'm going to tip it off. We got the game changer moving over to the two guard. Okay, we got JP running the swing position. I'll start off with you, Justin. The playoff race is heating up. Who do you think will make it? How do you think these playoff races will shake out?
Well, I'm going to start off with the East, fellas. To be quite frank, I think we're pretty much set with the exception of the 7th and 8th seed. I think New York and Philly, depending on what happens in the next six matchups, could go either way. But I'll tell you what, Chicago better watch out. New York better not get that eighth spot. I think that Chicago's a lock at 1 at 46-15. It'll take a miracle for them to lose. I like Miami at the number 2 spot, playing against Philly in the 7th spot. I think that's a repeat of last year's first-round matchup where Miami pretty much dominated Philly. I think they'll do the same. I got Indiana at the 3 spot playing against Orlando if they don't tank without Dwight Howard for the rest of the season. I've got Boston, Atlanta, which is a matchup I hate personally, being that I'm an Atlanta Hawks fan, living over a decade of my life in Atlanta, Georgia, and the last person I want to play is the Boston Celtics in this Eastern Conference, fellas. I mean, I don't think Chicago wants to see them. I don't think Miami wants to see them. I don't think New York wants to see them. I think, you know, Chicago and Miami are the clear favorites here, but Boston is the sleeper team in the East, and it's going to be exciting. Get your popcorn ready, because I sure do.
Justin, you think Boston can beat Atlanta in the first round?
I don't think, Phil. I know. And I hate to say it, because I'm the biggest Atlanta fan you're going to find. You know,
okay.
Al Horford, he's not back yet. I think you got some turmoil in the locker room with Josh Smith wanting to be traded. I really wish that Orlando would surpass Atlanta, and Atlanta could drop to 6 and play Indiana, so we'll get to the second round of the playoffs for the third year in a row. I really think Atlanta has the matchup advantages over Indiana. They'd be a much better matchup than the Boston Celtics.
Game changer. I see you over there stretching out, getting ready. What are your thoughts on Justin's East playoff picture?
You know, I think he's right on. The thing I want to ask Justin is, you know, you got the Chicago, Miami, both should advance to the second round. Now, I think whoever winds up with New York is going to get a scare because New York has a lot of firepower, and they're still trying to figure out how to play together. And I think if the light bulb goes off, I think they're better than their record. So I think whoever gets them is going to have a scare, but they're going to advance. The team that the interesting matchup to me is whoever gets to play Indiana. Because though Indiana is a 3 seed, you know, they got a 6.45 win percentage right now, which says that they should be pretty much a lock to move on. Give me your assessment of that Indiana team.
I'll tell you, man, Indiana's got some individual players. Roy Hibbert, first-time All-Star this year. I drafted Danny Granger in my fantasy league this year. They've got a real solid team. I compare Indiana to a team like Philadelphia. You got a lot of pieces that can make other guys better or other teams better, but no superstar. Who do you go to in a clutch situation if you're Indiana? The only team out of the 8 teams I just mentioned that are in the playoffs I see Indiana beating is Orlando. And that's because Dwight Howard's a question mark. I don't think Indiana can hold a candlestick to any of these guys. I think New York will sweep them. I think Chicago would sweep them. I think Miami would sweep them. I know they showed up strong in the playoffs last year. I really like the talent that they have, but I just don't think they have enough.
So, fellas, let's transition to the West side of the bracket. JP, what are your thoughts on the West Coast, on the Western Conference?
To be honest with you, I'm more excited about the West Coast playoffs this year than I've been out of the playoffs in the NBA for a long time. This right here makes me a happy camper. I had a cliche that I was going to use, but I think it's inappropriate on air, so I'll keep it professional. I really, really like the Oklahoma City Thunder. I like San Antonio. I like the Lake Show. I like the Clippers. Everybody that's in right now, 5-1, I think has a chance to make a statement here. I really like what Memphis is doing with the Twin Towers with Zach Randolph and Z-Bo from Michigan State University. I think that's a bad matchup for the Clippers. Even though they're 1-2 against the Clippers this year, I feel like Zach was out for 2 of those games. I think that down low, the Clippers don't have enough to match up with the Memphis Grizzlies. So I got Memphis upsetting the Clippers in the first round. I got the Lakers running over Denver. I got OKC and Dallas being the best series out of the first round. I like the Durant-Nowitzki matchup. And I'll tell you what, fellas, everybody's predicting OKC. Me personally, I think they're one piece away. If they're not careful, Dallas will upset them. And if they don't, watch out, because I don't think they can beat the Los Angeles Lakers. Not with Kobe Bryant being the leading league in scoring at 33 years old, averaging the most minutes he's ever played in his career. Not with Andrew Bynum dominating the paint like he's dominating the paint. And not with Pau Gasol feeding Bynum and those two playing off each other the way that they're doing. Trust me, real sports guys, the Lake Show is going to be a problem.
Game changer. Thoughts?
Yeah, hey, you know, he's hitting it right on the head. Memphis gets daylights out of me, man. If you're a fan of the Clippers, the Lakers, Oklahoma City, or San Antonio, any of those teams sitting above Memphis, I would not want to play them at any point in this playoff. That is a loaded team. They are starting to figure out where everybody belongs and how to make it click over their last 10 games. They have beat some of the best teams in the league. They beat Oklahoma City. They beat Miami. That's a scary squad, man. That's a scary squad. And Z-Bo, he's one of those guys where he's going to hurt you. And he's going to hurt you bad. So I'm with Justin on that. The Clippers, I think this year they're a year away. I still think they still need some time to tweak, make some roster tweaks. That team ain't ready. You know, the Lakers, I think, as much as they wanted to get CP3 and as much as I think CP3 would have made them a different team, I think you're seeing what the Lakers are with Gasol and Bynum, and that is a matchup nightmare. So the Lakers are I don't like the Lakers as much as Justin, but they are a very, very dangerous team when you got Kobe. And the thing I want Justin to talk about a little bit is where is he putting Bynum as if you're ranking the top centers in the league, and there are only about four of them, where are you putting Bynum?
Well, let's go back. What don't you like about the Lake Show? I'm going to answer that question in 1 second. What don't you like about the Lakers right now?
They have – Ramon Sessions is better. Is he going to necessarily stop or slow down Tony Parker? No. Is he going to necessarily stop or slow down Russell Westbrook? No. Oklahoma City's front line, I think – can match up with the Lakers front line with Ibaka and Perkins. If there's one guy in the league who I think can handle Bynum or Dwight Howard one-on-one, it's Perk. He's done it before. He has a track record of doing it. And Ibaka is athletic enough to guard Gasol out on the perimeter. Ginobili's going to be tough for them to deal with. Yeah, you could put Kobe on him. That's going to really, you know, given Kobe's age and the amount of minutes he's already played in this really condensed schedule, where you're playing three or four games a week, to have him also trying to chase around a Ginobili who is, you know, getting rest every couple nights because that's how Pop is playing it. I still think that their lack of athleticism on the perimeter is still a huge weakness in the teams that they're going to face. Even if they go against the Memphis, if they fall back into that four spot, and the Clippers can overtake them for that division title and get that three spot, Memphis is going to give them a lot of problems with their athleticism on the perimeter. When you're talking about Rudy Gay, Tony Allen, those are guys who are going to really test the Lakers' ability to guard on the perimeter. Plus, Mike Conley, quiet as kept, is a really, really solid guard. He's not amazing. He's solid, and in that framework, he gets the job done for what they need to be done. That Memphis team is tough. And so I still think the Lakers – it's going to come down to matchups with the Lakers. And, again, I like what they're doing inside. I don't know if I have them getting as far as you because I do think that they still have some work to do on the perimeter.
Well, I got to give it to you. I think that's a phenomenal answer. I think we could go back and forth on this subject all night, but I don't want to handcuff the show.
We got more to talk about.
What's that?
I said, yeah, we got more to talk about.
Absolutely, absolutely. But great analysis on I do agree with you on that Lake Show Memphis matchup, but I just don't see the Clippers overtaking them. So I got Lakers over Denver, but that's a whole nother issue. As for Andrew Bynum, I love Andrew Bynum. another guy I had on my fantasy team. Guys laughed at me because they said I drafted him too high in the fourth round, all because he was missing five games in the opening in the first week. But the guy's an absolute stud. He's averaging 18.6 points per game, 12.2 rebounds. Each are career highs. He's finally healthy. He's finally getting it. Mike Brown is letting him have the ability to live, minus the three-point shots. I would argue that he is the second-best center in the league. And if you look at a fundamental standpoint, he's arguably the first. Now, personally, I'll take Dwight. However, I could make a solid argument for Andrew Bynum. If you look at his upside, if you look at his shooting percentage, if you look at his ability to dominate the ball in the low post, if you look at his rebounds, the guy had 30 rebounds last night against one of the best power forwards to ever play the game in Tim Duncan. 30 rebounds. When's the last time you saw that? Not to mention he's only 20 rebounds away from any Laker, beating any Laker in rebounds since Wilt Chamberlain for a season. How phenomenal is that for a guy who's just hitting his peak? Who's only 26 years old, drafted straight out of high school. This guy is about to break Wilt Chamberlain's rebounding record. Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Hey, I agree with him, man. I feel is gonna hold Bynum back is his injury history. That is really the absolute only thing. I totally agree with everything that Justin said. Everything that he said. I think the only reason that people have a hesitation with putting him above Dwight Howard right now is because of his injury history, and he hasn't been able to maintain this over an extended period of time as Dwight Howard has. But Justin hit it on the head. Fundamentals. Offensively, he's light years ahead of Dwight. Dwight, I think, is more physically gifted as far as his ability to move laterally, his quickness and his foot speed. But dang it, man, this cat Bynum is bringing it right now, man. This is what the Lakers expected. This is what they were hoping for. He's really starting to fulfill a lot of the potential that people foresaw in him when he was drafted. And he's still only 24. If he can put together a five-year run where he's fairly healthy, I think he surpasses Dwight Howard as the best center in the game within that stretch.
I couldn't agree with you more. One thing that I have to bring up, Kobe said this early in the year. Miami's got Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and LeBron James. Boston got Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. If you ask me, if I had to pick a big three to take, could you argue with Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, and Andrew Bynum playing like he's playing? Andrew
really
Bynum
could.
Makes the difference for that team.
He really
he's not
does.
The best
he
player
takes
on that team
to another level.
Of Kobe. But Andrew
yeah,
Bynum
he takes
is
that team to another level. And we all know the damage that Kobe can do when he has a good to great big playing with him.
Agreed.
Yeah, you know, early I'll eat a little crow right now. Early in the season, I was a little iffy on the Lake Show. I ain't gonna lie. I fry my crow and eat it up. You know what I mean? I was a little iffy on the Lake Show. And Bynum was one of those reasons. It's because is he gonna be 14-8 Bynum, or is he gonna be this monster? You know, 18-12. This is a different beast. This is a beast that we haven't seen from him on a consistent basis, and this Bynum makes him a very scary team. It really puts them back into the conversation where I don't think at the beginning of the season I would have put them in the conversation as a contender. I think it puts them back into the conversation as having a shot to contend for a title, get to the finals. We still all want to see that LeBron-Kobe finals. We still all want to see that. I don't care what you say. I don't care what side, if you're a LeBron fan, a Kobe fan, I'm neither, and I want to see it.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys at RealSportsGuys.com. We're having a lively debate between the Game Changer and Justin Page, our NBA resident analyst. We're going to move away from the playoff race and get to another hot topic. We got another 5 or 6 minutes left in this segment with Justin. Let's talk about the NBA MVP race. Who should win it? Who's in contention? I'll start with you, Marcus. What are your thoughts?
It's LeBron James' award to lose. I know everybody wants to give it to somebody else because of where LeBron's image is right now. But statistically, the brothers having one of the greatest seasons of all time. And beyond that, he passes the eyeball test over and over and over and over. As far as the regular season player, he's a beast. He's that dude. He's the best player in the game, period, point blank, end of discussion. He's the most dominant force in the game. He can do whatever he wants to do on the court. He's physically strong enough to do it. He's also skilled enough to do it. And there really isn't a player in the league who can stop him. Offensively, defensively, he's the dude right now. I have my gripes about his personality and his makeup, but as far as what that brother's doing on the court right now, it's undeniable. LeBron James should be MVP. If he doesn't win MVP, I'd say Durant will be my next in line to get it. And though to me, it's a two-horse race. It's one of those two guys. Nobody else to me has had a strong enough season to be in that conversation and has you could throw Kobe in there, but I think Kobe has an outside shot. I think it's really those two guys really going for it, and I think LeBron should win it. And if he doesn't, to me it's going to be more of a political thing, an image thing.
So the game changer is going with LeBron James for the MVP. Justin, tell me who you think should win the MVP and who will win the MVP and why.
I would tell you this. Game changer, we have a history of disagreeing, starting dating back to Allen Iverson. Anybody who knows me personally knows how I feel about the one that I call Prince James, Queen James. However, in this discussion, I couldn't agree with you more, and I hate to say it. I'll go ahead and eat a little crow. Since you did it earlier, I'll go ahead and do it now. I just feel as if, you know, like you said, it's a two-horse race. I got LeBron at 1A. I've got Durant at 1B. Not 1 and 2, because what's going to make the difference for me is these last six games. If KD catapults his team to the top of the West, And he gets away from shooting all those jump shots, acting like LeBron James and being scared to take it to the hole in the fourth quarter, then I will catapult KD over LeBron. But LeBron was a monster last night against the low-life New Jersey Nets. He's 12-1 without Dwayne Wade. And a lot of people are giving him flack for that, saying he didn't beat anybody. Well, I made a list. He actually beat six of the 12 teams that they're 12-1 against were playoff teams, including San Antonio and L.A., the cream of the crop in the West. So LeBron, statistically, almost 28 a game, 6 assists, 8 rebounds, those are Oscar Robertson-type numbers. So from that standpoint alone, I've got to give LeBron James, I'll respect him and not call him the queen tonight, and respect real sports guys. I will tell you that LeBron James is his award to lose. However, his fourth quarter woes, they make me nervous. And when D-Wade gets back on the court, I want to see LeBron act like he acted last night and quit deferring. Once he does that, he'll be my MVP for the next 10 seasons. However, I got a gripe with KD too. He's shooting that three. He's bailing himself out. He's bailing defenders out. I don't think he's playing up to his full potential as of late. So he may go down to third behind CP3. Let me just throw a stat out there for you guys. They've got a 63% win percentage this year. Last year it was only 39%. CP3 changed the culture of that team. He changed the style of play and elevated them over 20 percentage points higher in the win category in a shortened season. So CP3 deserves a nod as well.
Yeah, CP3 is – you're on point with the CP3 analysis. I mean, you look at where the Hornets are now, and he had that team in the playoffs last year and given the Lakers all kinds of fits. The Lakers didn't want nothing to do with that team last year in that first-round series. for me with LeBron, he can do all he want to do in the fourth quarter of regular season. He's got to show up in crunch time, in a conference, in the finals. He showed me he can do it. I mean, he killed. After that Chicago series last year where it was like give LeBron the ball and get out of the way at the end of the game, I thought he got it, and it was a wrap, and I thought Miami had it. You go back and listen to the tapes. I predicted them at 6 against Dallas. I didn't think Dallas had anything for him. And then that Dallas series happened, and I really it was confusing and mind-boggling and funny as heck all at the same time, because to watch a grown man not be able to figure out a 2-3 zone, just kind of it made me chuckle. You know, you're still the best player in the game. I don't care if they play in a boxing one. You're still the best cat in the game, man. Go be the best cat in the game. And that's my gripe with LeBron. If you're the best guy, if you're the best player in the game, and you have that in your mind, in that situation, when it's game 6, you know what, man? I'm putting up 70 shots. I'm the best player in the game. They're gonna have to guard me. If they're gonna win the championship, it's going through me. And it just didn't seem like he stood up and took that stance. Like, if you guys are going to win this title, it's going through me. And that's what I want to see out of LeBron when it counts, in the finals, in crunch time, in the playoffs. He can be nice. We all know he's nice in the regular season. He's been nice in the regular season for the last 8 years. I got to see it in the playoffs. That's my thing with LeBron. I got to see it in the playoffs. But he's my MVP this year. He's the best player in the game. He's a unstoppable force. You know, there's really not a whole lot you can do with him on the court. I mean, you just brace yourself, you know, hold your chest protector tight, you know, because he's going to bring it at you.
So Marcus and Justin are on the same page. LeBron James should win the MVP award. Now, fellas, we got a couple more minutes left in this segment with Justin. Next thing I want to get into, and the last thing, is this whole concept of tanking. Tanking in the NBA. There's been accusations out there that certain teams are losing on purpose and not giving their all in order to get more ping pong balls. Now, Marcus, I know this is very near and dear to your heart, but I'm going to call a reverse and allow Justin to get the first crack on this one. Justin, what are your thoughts?
Phil T, I appreciate you letting me take a stab before my man here. I just had some Gatorade. I'm feeling good. This issue, to me, it dates way further back than today. If you recall, in 03, Cleveland tanked for sure to get LeBron James. And look what it did to their franchise. They made more money in LeBron's 7-year career in Cleveland than most teams make in a decade. They were second only to the Lakers in ticket revenue. LeBron's jersey was second in sales to only Kobe Bryant during that 7-year stint. With that said, tanking can change your franchise. San Antonio, when they had David Robinson and they still choked, got the first pick and got Duncan, changed their lives. So at the end of the day, tanking can work. However, tanking can also fail you. So it's almost a 50-50 shot. I did some research. I went back to the last 10 years. Teams that didn't perform up to their abilities, that got the number one pick, let me just give you the list real quick. 01. I'm not counting this year because Kyrie Irving, the jury's still out on him. I think he's going to get Rookie of the Year. I think he's going to be a future superstar. So I'm going to go from 01 to 2010. Kwame Brown, bust. Yao Ming, superstar. LeBron James, superstar. Dwight Howard, superstar. Andrew Bogut, he's solid, but injuries have plagued his career, so I'm going to call him a bust for now. Andres Bagnarnis, Toronto. He's plagued with Toronto. He's plagued with injuries. He's a solid ball player, but injuries and being in Toronto, I'm going to call him a bust as well. Greg Oden, the biggest bust in the league since Sam Bowie.
No!
Biggest bust. He's worse than Sam Bowie. They could have had Kevin Durant. Don't get me started.
Oh, my goodness.
Continue. Derrick Rose, superstar. Blake Griffin, superstar. John Wall, jury's still out. Therefore, you got 5 All-Stars, five busts. It's 50-50 on tanking, guys. It's 50-50. It's a risk. It's a gamble. And we all know what MJ was doing with the Charlotte Bobcats this year. He's a gambler in nature. That's what he does. He's gambling to get Anthony Davis. He better hope that Anthony Davis doesn't turn out to be Kwame Brown. Thoughts?
Game changer.
Comments? Concerns?
Game changer. What you got?
See, this is my perspective on it. I have a little bit of a different angle than Justin on the situation. I don't even know why people call it tanking. It don't matter. It doesn't have a true impact. You get a few more ping pong balls, but rarely does a team with the worst record get the first pick. Justin took it back to 2001. I'm going to take it back to 85, okay? I'm going to take it back to 1985, all right? Since 1985, since the lottery system was in play, 1, 2, 3, 4 teams with the worst record or tied for the worst record have actually gotten the first pick. So this time every year, sports writers, fans, media get up in arms about teams tanking, teams not giving 100%, and this just matters. And then they come out, oh, the NBA needs to change the system. Teams are tanking to get more ping pong balls. This is the best system to prevent tanking possible. This is not possible. This is the best system to prevent tanking that is in play right now. What bothers me the most is I feel like this is one of those things where the NBA can't win from losing. It's more about the league and less about the actual practice to me. It's the same reason that there's a dress code in the NBA. It's the same reason that guys get teed up real quick for arguing with the refs. When in the football, a coach can call a ref all types of bleepity bleeps and nothing happens. You know what I mean? In baseball, coaches can say a bunch of stuff, but they kick some dirt on somebody, then they get thrown out. But they can say whatever. To me, it boils down to the public perception of the NBA. Because tanking is more beneficial in football. Because if you have the worst record, you're guaranteed the first pick. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. In the NBA, you have a shot. You have the best chance at the first pick. And as the numbers show, rarely do you actually get it. But yet, in the NBA, tanking is a problem. To me, there's something wrong about that. There's something not right about it. It just don't sit well with me. It offends my sensibilities. I don't understand it. So that's where I come from on it. And that's why the whole conversation, I don't want to hear people talking about tanking. Because it's like, you know, they only talk about it in the context of the NBA. They don't talk about hockey teams tanking. Nobody talks about baseball teams tanking. And I understand the monetary value of getting the number one pick. But if we go through that list of all the number one picks that Justin laid out, from Kwame Brown, Washington Wizards, not with them anymore. Yao Ming, Houston Rockets, he was with them for a long time. He made them a lot of money. That was a good investment. But even then, the Houston Rockets had the fifth worst record in the league. The Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron. LeBron made them a ton of money, but he ain't with them no more. Dwight Howard in Orlando, we will see how that ends up. Milwaukee just got rid of Bogey. Toronto's probably a year away from ending the Bargnani experiment. Yeah, and then there's Greg Oden. Then there's Greg Oden, and that didn't work out. D. Rose is probably going to work out in Chicago. We'll see what happens with Blake in L.A., Again, the jury's still out there. He's a good fit right now with CP3. We'll see how long they can make that work. He has some holes in his game that are being exposed that he has to begin to figure out how to fill and fill out the rest of his game. And maybe he's a cornerstone. Maybe he's a franchise player. Maybe he's just a highlight reel cat. We still have to wait and see with Blake. With John Wall and the Wizards, again, the jury's still out. And the Cavaliers and Kyrie Irving, again, the jury is still out on that one. But for the most part, and even if you go back further, I mean, the Sixers hit with Iverson, the Spurs hit with Duncan, Joe Smith, and Big Dog, and C-Webb, and Shaq. Okay, that was a hit. Larry Johnson, injuries, Derek Coleman, and Purvis Ellison, and, you know what I mean, David Robinson, all right, Danny Manning, nope. You know, Brad Daugherty, he's all right. Patrick Ewing, okay. But, I mean, the chances, again, the tanking, to me, it's more of a league thing, and it's more it actually doesn't make any logical sense why people even talk about tanking to me. Nothing mathematical, nothing statistical says that tanking is beneficial, so why do we think that teams are tanking? You know, these are some of the smartest basketball people in the world, but yet we seem to think that they're tanking. And to me, it's just it's for extra ping pong balls that don't guarantee you a title anyway. You know, I think we
could agree with your premise more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Grandmama?
What about him?
Game changer. Did you really just, Grandmama?
Yes, because he had the injuries. Because of the injuries.
Come
that's
on.
The only reason.
He was
because
a superstar. He was on his way.
He was. He was. Then he
just
blew
like
it back.
Just like
Grant
Anthony Hardaway. In that era, they weren't
absolutely. Absolutely. And then he blew his back out. So that's why I said, Not because I didn't mean I was on a roll, and I didn't mean to LJ like that. I'm not going to front. LJ was a great player. LJ was a beast. LJ was a one-of-a-kind power forward. You know, he was Barkley with 6 more inches on his vertical. You know what I mean? Explosive as heck. But when he hurt his back, it didn't work out for the – and it didn't work out for the Hornets. And that's part of the reason I'm going to because for the franchise – if they were tanking to get the first pick, it didn't work out.
LJ was great for a couple of years, 3 or 4 years. He was a beast. And then after that, the whole morning LJ thing fell apart, and it wasn't what they thought it was going to be.
So that's why I would retract my ant on LJ. I can do that. I can take that. I can retract that ant on LJ because I do appreciate LJ's game a ton.
Yeah, I remember LJ when he had those Converse with the React Juice. I was in 9th or 10th grade. If you made a left cut with the React Juice Converse, you know, you'd leave some yellow gel on the court. It was pretty bad, but
the hazard.
That's right. Now we just wrapped up an excellent segment with Justin Page, our NBA analyst and the game changer. We got to cut it short. Justin stepped in and gave us 35 solid minutes off the bench. We want to thank you so much, Justin. Thanks for coming on, my man.
Hey, fellas, I'm glad to be here anytime, and I'll see you in the playoffs. Don't meet me there, beat me there.
We hear you. Take care, man. Have a good night. Now, before I send it back to the game changer, and again, thank you so much, Justin, for coming on and blessing the mic. Before I move it back to the game changer, a quick word from our sponsors.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right, so here we go with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. I'm going to bring my man, D. Wills, back in the house. D. Wills, you know how it goes.
We need more dogs.
And quickly, I'll say, you and Chris Webber, but I understand about the team. But Webb didn't fail at the end of the day. But my Dog of the Week, y'all talked about him in the NBA segment. It was a good segment. LeBron, 17 in the fourth. I've been banging him. I banged him on his dog. But he demonstrated, he gave us a glimpse of what he can do when he really puts his mind to it in that fourth quarter performance.
Excellent. PhD.
We need more dogs.
I'm rolling with Dustin Pedroia. Boston Red Sox. Hey, my man said, hold up, partner. You talking about family business, and, you know, you just got married a week ago. You need to get in the family a little bit longer before you start talking about family business. So I'm going with Dustin Pedroia. I'm also going to have a shout-out to JP, Justin Page, who just came on. He's my secondary dog of the week.
All right. Last but not least, got the game changer.
We need more dogs.
Hey, my dog of the week is John Calipari. He did it again. Man, grab the number one recruiting class, and today his number one recruiting class from last year all left. It's like a revolving door out there, man. They're going to need name tags at practice next year. You know, hi, my name is. Get to know each other a little bit. But props to John Calipari. He's going to have another five or six guys get drafted, and he's going to be sitting at draft night. And it's going draft night is going to be another UK commercial. It's going to be a commercial for the University of Kentucky, and he's going to be front and center. And he's got it rolling down there. So props to him, you know, pulling in another number one recruiting class after letting the number one recruiting class go. Good for him. Now, I want to talk to my man, PhD. We're going to preview next week's show, and then we're going to get into the shutdown. You got it, brother.
Well, first of all, I want to thank our guest today, Coach Lance Leipold, the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, and also Bill Curry, who we taped his conversation earlier today from Georgia State. Also, I want to send a shout-out to the SIDs there, Tom Fick, and also Allison. Thanks a lot for making that happen for us. So next week on our show, we have Mike Jarvis, the head basketball coach at Florida Atlantic. Coach Jarvis used to be at St. John's as well as George Washington. He's always a great interview. We're looking forward to having him come on. In addition, we have Eric Hamilton, our fantasy football guru. He's going to come in and help us get ready for the NFL draft, which will be happening in a couple of days after our show next Tuesday. So we're greatly looking forward to having Eric on. You know, Eric's been in hibernation all winter, getting ready for this moment. You know, this is a guy who's already working on his fantasy football rosters. So he's going to help us outline and talk about some guys that might do some damage in fantasy football next year. The following week, May 1st, we have one of the hottest coaches in the country, Dave Dorn, former coordinator with the Wisconsin Badgers and is the head coach at Northern Illinois. He had an excellent season his first year there. He won the Mid-American Conference and had an 11-3 record, best in school history. So we're greatly looking forward to having Coach Dorn on 2 weeks from today. Tomorrow, our new baseball show, Inside the Park, which is led by R.J. Page as well as Hank and Michael Bailing. They're going to be on talking about the issues in Beantown, and they're also going to cover other Major League Baseball talk. They come on every Wednesday at 8:30 Central. Same page. You can hit them up at www.realsportsguys.com. And they had a big-time guest last Wednesday. Jonah Carey came on, and he and RJ had an excellent conversation about baseball. Check it out in iTunes, Real Sports Guys, and you'll see the episode with Jonah Carey. Excellent 15 to 20-minute conversation that Justin and Jonah had about baseball. So that's what we got coming up on the Real Sports Guys. Back to you, Marcus.
All right. Now we're going to get into the shutdown. This is the segment of the show where we pick some silliness that's going on either in the national media, just in the world in general, and we shut it down for the next week. All right? So, D-Wills, what's your shutdown this week, man?
My shutdown is really Phil's dog of the week. Pedroia, talking about how we do things in Boston. The only thing y'all do in Boston is eat chicken, drink beer, and crush and crash in September. I don't want to hear nothing about what y'all do in Boston. What y'all need to do is just play and let Johnny do what he does. Let Valentine be the manager. Talking that stuff.
What'd you say? You want to hear Pedroia with one of these?
You play to win the game.
No, don't tell me about the Boston way. Okay. PAG, what you shut down for the week?
I'm shutting down Jalen Rose for what he did with Skip Bayless. I know we might get into it in the after hours. He calls him out. Skip, did you average 1.4 points per game your senior year? Okay, you have nothing else to say. That's what I'm shutting down.
And I'm going to pull it Roger Goodell, and I'm shutting down Sean Payton myself, man. Man, Goodell threw the book. He threw the manual. He threw that little instruction sheet at him, man. He threw everything at this cat. This cat can't talk to anybody related with football, related with the NFL for the next 7 months, all right? This is something that if you couldn't talk to people in your career, for the next 7 months, man, that would be pretty hard to do because I'm sure that's a lot of your friend circle. Those are a lot of people that you have strong relationships with. That's going to be pretty tough. So Sean Payton got shut down. So that's the shutdown for this week. Now, we're going to go into the after-hours section, and in after-hours this week, we have the funky editorial where we're going to do a little stock exchange action with some NBA players. We're going to talk about guys whose stock has increased over the past season. Now that we're to the end of the season, some guys whose stock is going down and some blue chip stockers who you want to get in on early. So we're going to get into that. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Boston situation. We're going to get into Sean Payton's situation. The NFL schedule just came out. So make sure you check out the After Hours section. And how do you do that? You have to download it. All right? So for you live listeners, we're going to be wrapping up in about 15, 20 seconds. Come back in the morning, download the show. You get the After Hours section and all the greatness that comes with that. This is The Real Sports Guys, www.realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, signing off for this week. All right, welcome to the After Hours section of Real Sports Guys. This is Marcus Game Changer, holding you down, and we're going to get it started. We're going to get into a funky editorial. We're going to talk about the NBA. The season is wrapping up. We're going to play a little stock. We're going to do a little stock broking right now, stock assessment. Pull out your portfolio. Look at some guys that you got with stocks rising, guys whose stock is dropping, and some blue chippers who are buy low candidates, guys you want to get in on early because in a couple of years the stock is going to be really high. So we're going to break down some guys who really improved their status or who are dropping down in the NBA season as we're at that point of the year where it's a good time to do that. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Again, welcome to the After Hours section. You're on with Real Sports Guys, www.realsportsguys.com.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes,
Coleman,
yes,
Ryan,
yes,
say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Yes, sir, we are going to get funky one more time with the funky editorial. I'm going to pass this one to my man, PhD, and let him set up the offense real quick. Now, let's start with a guy, and we're going to go around the horn. Each of us is going to take a turn. Give your guy. The other guys will get a chance to chime in. And if you want to go, it's my list. Feel free to. All right? on RSG, we got this thing, man. Anytime we like to do lists, but we also like to get at each other. You always got that. Well, it's my list. You know, and that's PhD right there. That's copyrighted to PhD. It's my list.
That's right.
So, PhD, go ahead. Who you got up first? Stock up.
So stock up, I'm going with Mike Conley. Mike Conley, the point guard for the Memphis Grizzlies. This kid has had an excellent season, you know, in our fantasy basketball league. And side note, just give me 2 minutes to talk about me and what I've accomplished, okay? So Phil T had a rough fantasy football season. I had a rough season. I made the playoffs, but, you know, it was just rough. Fantasy basketball has kind of been my thing. And going into the last 2 weeks of the season, I was a 10 seed. And only the top 8 seeds make it. Okay? I made the playoffs as an 8 seed, and I'm currently in the fantasy basketball finals this week. Okay, so 3 pats on the back to me, plus I'm going to throw in another one to make it a square 4. But back to Mike Conley, the catalyst on my fantasy basketball squad. So, you know, I'm trying to bring it back. I like what Conley has done. He has developed his outside game. He's making the jump shot from 18 to 3-point range. We always knew he was very quick off the dribble and could create. I only see this kid getting better. And the nice thing about it is he's got so much support out there offensively that he doesn't have to score. Like a lot of the point guards in the league, such as Kyrie Irving, Williams, they have to score for their team to have a shot. So what you see with Conley, you see a kid who's shooting a fairly high percentage from the field for a point guard, and you see nights he has 13 and 7 assists. But other nights he can drop 25 into you. So I'm buying. Stock up, Mike Conley.
All right. D. Wills, who you stock up on?
This is kind of a stock up and kind of the and will be our third one. I want to talk about him just because of the way his season started. Not professionally. Oh, I forgot to say I'm also in the finals, Phil. So I'm just not going to let you have this moment by yourself in my other league.
Okay.
So I want to make sure that I understand where you are and how you feel about being in the finals. But this guy had a tumultuous beginning. He got divorced before he got started, and it was public. Chris Humphries, this cat is averaging a double-double. And every night when you watch him, he's battling. This is a guy that was getting booed, not because of his play, but because of his relationship with somebody who he should have been booed for. And he's performing every night. It was like something inspired him. And so this is a guy that, you know, his team hasn't had all the kind of success that you like to see, but this guy's stock is up. I mean, he's averaging a double-double right now, and I think this guy has an upside.
Okay, so I'm going to throw mine in, and we can talk about each other's. All right? So my stock up for the season, another guy who started off with a very, very questionable start to his season, kid turned it around and brought it. And that's DeMarcus Cousins, Sacramento Kings. Got his coach fired. you know, looked like this wasn't going to go well at all. Looked like you had a Rasheed Wallace part two on your hands. you know, and the young brother turned it around. They haven't won a lot of games out there, which is the next step for him. But he's turned in a very promising season, 16 and 11, almost 12 boards a game. Good percentages across the board. He's a real nice player. Can score inside, can score outside. As long as he doesn't fall in love with that three-point shot, I'm buying a lot of DeMarcus Cousins stock today. I'm getting in on him right now. I think he's a player who went from having a lot of potential to a really good player. And I think next year, you know, if he continues to develop, you're going to see him take that next step into becoming a great player. And, you know, maybe even pushing himself into that, buying him Dwight Howard territory as far as big men go. Right now, he's kind of hanging outside the club, you know, looking at Marc Gasol, and I don't know who else you want to throw in there. Again, there aren't a ton of good centers, but I think Marc Gasol is kicking it in the club by himself and watching Dwight and Bynum hang out in the VIP right now as far as the centers club go. You know, Bill Russell and Wilt hanging out at the door letting people in. So he's outside waiting in line trying to get his outfit together right now, make sure he can pass the dress code. So that's what we all stock up on. I want to touch base on Phil's guy. I'm riding with you on that one, Phil. I like Mike Conley a lot. I like what he does on the court. He's a very solid guy. He reminds me of a Rod Strickland type or Derek Harper. Remember Derek Harper from the Knicks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back in Riley days with the Knicks. That's what he reminds me of, a dude who's just solid as heck. He's not going to impress you. You may not necessarily ever put him in a conversation of a top 5 or 6 point guard, but he's always a 7 or 8. Year in and year out, he's always a 7 or 8. And I think that's the trajectory his career is starting to take, where for the next 3 or 4 years, he always is going to be 6, 7, or 8. And when you're talking about some of the best point guards in the league, he may never break into that top 5 because the league is loaded with point guards right now, but he's going to be in the conversation kind of in that mid-range as one of those guys who you really respect and who quiet as kept is doing a lot of work. And, you know, those are guys like Rod Strickland and Derek Harper who had really good careers
Nobody would ever put them on anybody's list of great point guards. But when you talk about – when you talk to cats who know the game and you start talking about guys like Rod Strickland and Derek Harper, those are guys that most people are going to respect and respect how they play. So I like the Conley pick. I like the Conley pick.
And Cousins was my other – I like Conley pick as well, but Cousins was – I think you did a really good job, Marcus, of just talking about where he started, where we all thought, oh, my goodness, this is going in the wrong direction. And, I mean, he's had some big games. I mean, I have him on my fantasy squad, but he's had some big games, and he's maturing and growing in a way that, you know, people didn't think he could turn the corner on it. I mean, it still remained to be seen, but he's somebody that, you know, if he puts it all together, he can be a beast out there. He's going to be hard to handle. And I've had some chance. That's what I love about the NBA pass. I've had some chance to really watch him play, and he's definitely been putting work in.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Chris Humphreys, you know, Devon, that was one. Kind of make a statement. Kobe Bryant is the best basketball player ever. So that statement, the feeling that you got in your gut was it just didn't sit right. So, and I don't feel that way, okay? I don't want to get any evil fan mail. But Chris Humphreys kind of fits that mold, you know. I remember I had texted you guys, you know, the preseason had started, and I'm thinking, why can't Chris Humphreys get a job? Here's a young man that averaged a double-double last year. I think he was 10-10 last year. And opportunity knocked on the door. He went back to New Jersey. Brooke Lopez only played 5 games, unfortunately. And he has stepped up. Humphreys, I like his game. I mean, I liked it last summer. I actually think he'd be decent on the U.S. team. You know, for a squad that's always lacking bigs. I mean, he's a big that I think could do some damage in an international game, especially because he can stretch it out to about 15 to 18 feet. But I like that selection, Devon, Chris Humphreys.
Yeah, I've been watching him and just, I mean, when you just think about some of the other stuff he had to deal with to begin the season, well, he's been totally just, something motivated him. He's just been putting work. I mean, he's leading the team in blocks as well as rebounds, double-double. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, you know, if he doesn't stay in New Jersey, if he ends up somewhere else, I mean, he's a piece that can push somebody to the next level.
Yeah, I'm not with y'all on that one. I'm just going to say that and leave it at that. I can't get down with Chris Humphreys, man.
It's my pick.
I got to see him play when it's not a contract year, man. I got to see him get down when it's not a contract year. All right, stock down.
We're all motivated by something.
PhD, who you stock down on, man?
I was torn between two, but I don't want to steal from nobody. I'm going to go with Rondo, Ray John.
Mm.
Stock down.
How's that? On the show pick.
He didn't even let you explain yourself. He's not within your logic or nothing.
So stock down is not necessarily a bad thing. We're talking about perception. I mean,
right.
You know, now take it back. I mean, I'll take it back to you. I'll take it back to you and talk about the whole thought of stock. You know, this is the best time to pick him up if you can in a league because perception is down. Now, I think two or three weeks from now when the playoffs have started and he's putting up some crazy numbers, I think that'll remind everybody to what we were saying about him last playoffs. But I think with the personality issues, some of the things that happened early in the season, that kind of leads to the perception that, okay, this guy was on the upward trajectory where he was in the argument of perhaps one of the best point guards in the league, if not the, but now CP3 is back. And when somebody busts through the door, we got to forget about somebody. Darren Williams has done his thing. Westbrook has done his thing. So all of a sudden, Rondo has dropped down, you know, below those three guys plus D Rose. And in my mind, that's not the case. So perception is a big thing in stock, and that's why I say Rondo is stock down.
Okay. D Will?
This person's stock was like a recession hit for him this year. Way down. Lamar Odom. This guy went from being sixth man of the year. People thinking Lakers were crazy. Like, what's going on in L.A.? Think about the perception at the beginning of the season versus now. Now L.A. looks like they knew what they were talking about. They're kind of smoothing things over. But Lamar Odom, I was critical at the beginning of the year. I mean, this guy is sixth man of the year. He's, you know, 6'11", 7 foot, all that stuff. And then just went to Dallas and lost his mind. And, you know, we don't know if he ever going to come back. This is like he a penny stock right now. I just, you know, and so his stock is way down. I mean, I don't know if it'll ever recover.
Yeah,
He might need a bailout.
Sell those shares. Sell them. Get them while they hot.
I mean, this is how bad it is. The shark, the cat who owned the shark, had to say, you can't come back. The king of investments, Mark Cuban, was like,
they are who we thought they were. They are who we thought they were.
And sometimes you have to let them off the hook. In this situation, they had to let that brother go. Because it's just like, man, we can't have you walking around here, man, acting like moping and stuff. We can't have moping. Who mopes? You a grown man. Why are you moping? You know you can do whatever you want, right? You grown. You got to mope. Kids mope because they can't do what they want to do.
Adults
shouldn't mope. You got a problem with something, change it. If you can't change it, find a different situation, man. Don't mope, though. Don't mope. All right, my stock down is Chris Bosh. And the reason my stock down is on Chris Bosh is not because Chris Bosh is necessarily depreciated as a ball player, but it's similar to Phil Tees. I would sell stock on Chris Bosh right now because more than likely you bought stock. You bought superstar stock when you bought your stock in Chris Bosh. And now you're realizing he's not superstar stock. All right? And now you got to sell that stock back. You know, Heat fans are all over Bosh. Bosh is the problem for everything, man. You ever been on a Heat message board, man? Bosh is the reason that South Korea got nuclear weapons. Whatever's wrong in the world, Bosh is the one who gave the Kardashians a TV deal. Whatever's wrong in the world, man, they blame it on Bosh. It's Bosh's fault, man. It's Bosh's fault. Everything is Bosh's fault. So
cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
Can't do it, man. That's how Heat fans feel right now, man. They're looking at this guy like you're supposed to be a part of the big three. It's like a big 2.2. Like, you know, last year we were saying it's the 2.5. Now it's like a 2.2. You know what I mean? So I like the Rondo pick. The Odom pick, I think, is the most on point because that is a guy who was up here, and now he's just falling off the map. I mean, just complete meltdown. Complete meltdown. Just a shell of himself, man. And it's tough to see somebody go out like that. You hope he can bring it back. You hope he can redeem himself and go out with some sort of dignity about himself. And not to say that he feels that way. That's just the perception of the situation. I don't know how he feels about himself. But it just looks like he doesn't. It looked like he shouldn't feel good about himself. I mean, I don't really know how else to put it, man.
Homie's a game changer. Homie's a game changer. He just looked like it.
I mean, I don't know. That's just how I see it, man. So, now we've done stock up, we've done stock down. Anybody want to talk about anybody else's stock downs?
I got one.
Nah.
Go for it.
I got one. Okay.
Young Newell, in the back of the room with your hand up.
I don't have facts to back this up.
All right, I'm bracing myself. Here we go.
I'm gonna roll with Steph Curry. Steph Curry, stock down. Steph Curry, stock down. He's only played in 26, 27 games this year. Injuries have hurt this kid, literally. But when he was playing, you could tell he didn't have that explosiveness. First couple of years in the league, averaged 17, 18. The 26 games he's played in, he's around 13 to 14 per game right now. He just doesn't have that explosiveness. So I think for him it's good that they moved on with Ellis. Because, I mean, you're just kind of curious, how do these two guys fit? And one of the guys I almost picked for stock up was Brandon Jennings. And so now I'm wondering, how is this going to work with Ellis? You know, Ellis is just kind of that odd piece. You know, great player, but where do you fit him in? I mean, how does it work? So I think Curry's going to have a great year next year, but his stock is down right now, perception's down. But I'm going to pick him up in the fifth round next year, and he's going to do his thing.
It's some ankles, man. His ankles are his ankles to Steph Curry are knees to Greg Oden. Take that analogy, SAT. He got them ankles, man. His ankles bad, man. He got them 14-year-old ankles, man. Them little thin ankles. I got thin ankles too, man. They run in my family, man. Me and my brothers all got thin ankles, man. My ankles, I don't even know if I have tendons left in my ankle. I can roll my ankle all the way around, 360 degrees, I can turn my foot. Because I have nothing left in my ankles. Steph Curry got ankles like me. It ain't fun. That's a good one, man. You said you was going to go stock up on Brandon Jennings.
Yeah, I was.
You sure?
Ugh. Well, I mean, he was in my top 10. You know, I mean, it's not
okay.
Like it was my second one, and I was going back and forth, but I gave him a strong look over.
Okay. All right. Okay. So now we're going to we're going to give folks our buy low options, all right? These are the guys you want to get in on now. You know, this is Google at the ground level, man. You got to get in on this right now. And that's the real sports guys. This is what we're about. We're about giving you that the early input, you know, giving you that early intel. You got to get in early on these guys, man. So, D-Wills, who's your get-in early guy? Who's your buy low?
Well, I talked a little bit about Humphrey. I said Humphreys might be in two categories for me right now, but he's kind of emerging. I think people are, catching him a little bit early, but I do think that he's the kind of person you can get. The other thing is his teammate. Because, you know, this is where, you know, teams like the Lakers and back in the day in Boston used to steal these cats, you know, let them mature somewhere else and then bring them in and get them, is Gerald Green, who has been putting it together here. You know, it takes some of these kids a while to just mature and they realize how they need to play the game. But, you know, he's been on a tear on the last month. He's put some really good games together. This is the kind of kid that, you know, if you can find a way to get him now that he's made some, you know, dedicated himself to the game. He can do a lot of different things on the floor and is realizing the potential, I think, that people thought he could do earlier in his career. So I would say, you know, someone like Gerald Green is someone that would be someone you could get, would be a nice piece for your team at this point in his career.
That's a good pick. That's a good pick. Young Newell in the back with your hand up. What say you?
So obviously I've been struggling during this segment, you know, Rondo and Curry buy low, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm just reinventing the wheel. Okay. So I'm going to go with Gorat in Phoenix and Greg Monroe in Detroit.
Yeah, those are good ones.
I like those. I like those.
You know, D. Wills has been on Gorat for a while. He's been on him for a while, and I finally bought in. I saw him play earlier in the season, and he had a quiet 16 and 18 game against the Spurs, and he dominated He made Tim Duncan look old. He straight dominated them in the paint. And then Greg Monroe, this guy's going to be an all-star pretty soon. Now, this might be some wishful thinking, but I think Detroit is on the up and up. Brandon Knight,
I called it at the break. Remember I said at the break we called a team. I said Detroit in the second half, team to watch. I just want to – sorry.
You did, and I laughed at you. I laughed at you, and I'll take it back. I'll take it back. You know, if my wife is listening, I'll just say you told me so. Yes, you did, D. I tell you what, though, I think Greg Monroe is a star in the making. I think when you look at Al Jefferson 4 or 5 years ago, when he finally got out of Boston. No, he had that one strong year in Boston. And then when he went to Minnesota, he was the guy. Different players, but I think Greg Monroe is on par and ready for a breakout season next year.
Excellent. All right, I'm going to weigh in on mine, and then we're going to go around the horn and give everybody a shot at each other. So, for me, my buy low guy, Andre Bargnani. All right? Let me explain myself. Hold on. Let me explain myself. All right? Put the knives away. Put them away.
Go ahead. Do that.
Remember, about 4 or 5 years ago, remember where Pau Gasol was in his career. He was stranded in Memphis. Really was acknowledged as a good player, but not a dominant player. There was something always, you felt like something was missing. You felt like he was miscast in his role as a number one guy. He gets traded to the Lakers, and lo and behold, he becomes a force in the right situation. And Bargnani has an excellent skill set as far as being a 7-foot shooter. The things that he can do at 7 foot, you can put him, if you put him with the right situation and the right team, he's a guy I think who can have a Gasol-like effect where he changes the complexion of a roster by picking him up. He's not he's thought of as a good player right now, but he's not somebody you're going to have to break the bank to get. He's not somebody that a team out there would have to mortgage their future to get a hold of. And in a minute, Toronto is kind of going to be like, okay, this has run its course. We need to move on. We need to go in a different direction. And you're going to be able to get him at 75 cents on the dollar. So that's a guy I think, you know, he has a very interesting skill set for his size, something that could be very useful to a lot of teams out there to be able to put a guy at power forward who can stretch the floor like he can. Because he's been playing out of position at center as well. A lot like Gasol was before when he was early in his career where he was playing center. You move him to power forward, and now, you know, he's wreaking havoc on the league. And so that's my guy, Andre Bargnani, all right? I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of text messages in the morning from all my peeps, but I'll defend that, man. I'll defend that. I'll go to bat for that one. So I'll go first. Monroe, spot on. Georgetown, Hoya, the pedigree is there. They make big men at GU. That's what they do. And Monroe is just the next in line. Nerlens Noel, you missed out, man. Nerlens Noel missed out. He's gonna go to UK. Should have went to GU, man. He could have changed the game up with that one. He could have been a game changer. We ain't mad. Enjoy it. Enjoy your 1 year at UK. We ain't mad.
Yeah, and I would say Bargnani, the one thing, I think everything you said about, I think you don't have to break the bank to get him. I always get nervous with big men who can't rebound. The one thing that Gasol did grow into, and maybe that's part of what your discussion is about, is that maybe in another place that those kind of things would come together. But I felt like Gasol was a little bit better on the boards and the rebounding. Doesn't have an overwhelming physical presence, but I just think that I would like to see him be a little bit more physical presence, but I think all the things that you said about him is correct. I just get nervous when a guy's averaging in 5-6 rebound range when you're, you know, you're a 7-footer like that. I know he's a finesse guy. You know, I like to see a few more block shots with him, but those kind of things that I'd like to see. But maybe a change in scenery might allow for those things to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Powell's numbers before he got to L.A., and he never had a season over 10 rebounds. He had 1 year at 9. Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be the, you know, you would hope that.
And now he's a perennial double-digit rebounder. Now
yeah,
Powell gets double-digit rebounds every year.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know, if you think if he can do that, if
yeah.
Devondre can do that, and that's the part that I have to figure out whether I think he could make that transition. But for all the reasons, I think you're right. He is I think you can get him on the cheap, and you shouldn't be able to. I think the only reason you can is because he's stuck up in Toronto. Because even with
yeah,
the
he's a former number one pick who's not killing, yeah. And you know, perception. Perception is everything, and
yes.
Perception
yes.
is everything, and how people see you is how you're going to be valued. You know.
Yeah.
So And again, the Monroe pick, I think Monroe is again, he if Cousins is outside trying to get his outfit, make sure his outfit is right, Monroe's in line behind him. You know what I'm saying? Monroe's right in line behind him, you know, checking his outfit, making sure he got on the right shoes, the shirt, you know, collar, you know, button down on, got on some, you know, got on some sneakers, got on some Stacey's or something like that, trying to make sure he can get into the center clothes.
And I have to agree with that because my conversation about Detroit, and I felt Monroe is really growing and maturing. And, you know, he's someone with a big time upside, and he's a great passing big man. You know, and anytime you got a big man who can pass, that just puts so much more pressure on the defense.
Yeah. GU, man, that's the Georgetown pedigree. That's all I got to say. One thing I want to touch on before we close it out, because we're getting close to the end of our after-hours session. One thing I want to touch on, though, D-Wade and the Olympic comments. You know, you talked about PAC, you talked about Humphreys as a possibility on the Olympic team. Did you guys get it? If you hadn't heard it, you know, D-Wade made a comment, and it was taken out of context. But he was asked the question about would he want to be paid for participating in the Olympics. Somebody asked him if he wanted to be paid, and he said that he would like to be paid, and he think they should be paid. It wasn't that he came out of the blue, like, we should be paid. But somebody asked him, do you want to be paid? And he said, yeah, I think we should be paid. And, you know, so taken out of context, it was presented as if he just came out of the blue, like, yeah, man, I'm going to be in the Olympics. Y'all got to pay me. You know? And that's not what it was. But anyway, the U.S. Olympic team, this is an Olympic year. Let's talk about that for a moment before we close it out. You know, you talked about Humphreys on the team. You know, I think there are some guys who are probably shoe-ins to make the squad. If I were to make a quick list of guys who I think would make the squad, I'm going to make a quick list. I want y'all to give me in or out, all right? In or out on the U.S., on the Team USA this summer. All right, let's start with the guards. Kobe, in or out?
In.
In.
All right. CP3, in or out?
In.
In.
Wade, in or out?
Out.
He will?
In. In.
In. Okay. So Wade's iffy. We got to talk about Wade. We'll go back to Wade. All right. Derrick Rose, in or out?
Out.
Out.
Oh, out. Okay. Remember, we can only take about four. We can only take about four guards. All right, we got two already. We got two ins for sure. Wade's an if. Rose is out. Westbrook, in or out?
Out.
In.
Okay, so we got to go back to Westbrook. All right. D. Will. I mean, the other D. Will. Darren Williams.
In.
Yeah.
in.
All right, so that's three. That's three spots now. That's three spots. Okay, we got two pure point guards, and we got Kobe. We got Paul, Darren Williams, Kobe, Rondo.
Out.
All right. I'm out of guards. I'm out of worthy guards. I'm out of guards. Okay, so we got Kobe, Paul, and Darren Williams in. All right. Westbrook and D Wade. Who are we taking? All right. D Wills. You said in on Westbrook. Why? I mean, you said D Wills. You said in on Wade. Why?
I think you're going to have a mixture of guys who have kind of been there. I'm actually going to change on that because now that I see how we constructed it, I'm actually going to say Wade out and Westbrook in because I think part of the mix is they got to create the transition for the new leadership. And so I would say Westbrook is going to be in on this one as someone that they're big on priming young players to be the leaders of the future. And
oh,
given
man, I'm taking
that,
it to Facebook, man.
Yeah.
Y'all to kick D-Wade off the Olympic team? I'm taking this to Facebook, man.
I'm telling on y'all. But I've heard them, you know, talking about that they're trying to find a good mix of veterans and some of the young players to help with the transition and maintain some of the continuity. So I that's a controversial thing, but I think Westbrook might be in. Not playing a lot, but he'll be in.
Okay. All right, so Westbrook is in. All right, because y'all both in on Westbrook. Now, TAD, you went in on Westbrook early. What's your reasoning? I just want to hear it. Because I'm putting this on Facebook. I'm opposing to the fans out there, man.
So with Westbrook, I think he's just so dynamic. We saw this in the 2008 Olympics, where it was kind of a breakout for him that summer, and then he came in and he had his breakout year in the NBA in that 08-09 year. You can play him at the two, you can play him at the three. In some ways, he even thrives at the two or three. You know, I mean, you can move him around, he can crash the boards, he can match up with guys. You can put him on the court with LeBron, and he doesn't need to create his own chops. He can run the break. He can finish. I just think he's a very dynamic player, and now his perimeter game has got much more consistent than what it was 4 years ago.
Okay.
All right. And that's what I was thinking about. Who are interchangeable players? Who could play, who could move to the two, play the point. You know, that's where people like, you know, Darren Williams, Chris Paul, I mean, they can play the point, but they, you know, there's situations where you can move them off position to the two. You can create a smaller lineup, and there might be times when you want to go small. So that's what drove me, whereas you can't play D. Wade, even though he's played point, I don't know that's where he is at this point in his career. And so, you know, and you need to find some way to get some of the younger players on the squad.
Okay. All right, so those are four guards right there. All right, now let's go to forward. Let's go to the forward position. All right, Bron.
And.
And, capital I, and.
All right, Durant.
And
Carmelo.
And
all right, that's three in. Okay, other guys we're looking at the forward spot, Chris Bosh.
Out.
You know, I gotta go in.
All right, we got to come back. We got to revisit that one. Andre Iguodala.
Out.
Out, yeah.
Okay, Iggy's
I mean,
out.
You can't go him and Westbrook.
But you say then other countries gonna be looking at us like, oh, y'all trying to lose this year, huh?
Right.
Rudy Gay.
Ooh.
I would say in.
Yeah, I would go in too.
Okay. All right. So we got Melo, Durant, and Rudy Gay. The other possible options, Lamar Odom, was coming up next on my list. In or out?
Out.
I'll just ask.
Out.
Double
that.
No shame. No shame. That's wrong with that.
All right, and now we go to the kind of the big man position. We just gonna call it a post because you know we only got like one or two true centers. All right, so we got the bigs. D12. We gotta take four bigs. D12.
In.
All right. Kevin Love.
In.
In.
Blake Griffin.
Out.
I think he's gonna be in because they see him as a featured leader of the team. For some reason, they're buying in. I think he's gonna be in.
Okay, we gotta revisit. We gotta revisit Blake.
Yeah.
All right. LaMarcus Aldridge.
In.
Out.
All right. We gotta touch on that one. We got to touch on that one. Who else we got left on this list? Tyson Chandler.
In.
I'm torn.
What'd you say? I got one more. You want to hear my next one? Then maybe that makes a decision for you. Andrew
sure.
Bynum. Now, he's not currently on the team. He's not currently in the system.
Yeah, I would say out on Bynum. And I would also say I'd go out with Chandler with the thought of Rudy Gay can also drop down.
I would say out. The only way I say out on Chandler is that I think Bosch would drop into the big man category. So if Chandler wasn't going, Bosch would drop into the big man category and not be in that
okay.
forward category.
Okay, that's why I held off on the Bosch debate. I held off on the Bosch debate because, okay, so
the guys who we're questionable on right now, Blake Griffin versus LaMarcus Aldridge. Now, D. Wills, you are high on Griffin. Why so?
No, well, between those two, I'm going with Aldridge. The reason why I think Griffin is going to be in is for the reason that Colangelo said about what in terms of how they want to build the team in terms of having future leaders. And I just think from a brand, is he going to get big minutes? Because they still limited offensively for the international game. If I had to pick between the two, I'd take Aldridge. Because Aldridge has – more of an international, I think. Yeah, he can step out in space. He's interchangeable. He can play with a smaller lineup. You can play him big. So between those two, if I'm pushed, because I said yes, I think, to both of them, I would go to Aldridge.
Okay. D. Wills. I mean, PhD, where you at with that?
With Aldridge versus Griffith?
Yeah.
You know, Blake, for me, big guys got to be able to knock down that 15-foot jumper. That's why Garnett and Odom are like tailor-made for international play. And guys that can't do that are liabilities. That's why I think we both were kind of fighting to say no to Rondo. So for that reason, we've seen this movie at play. When Vince Carter and all these high-flying guys went, you know, and lost, came in fifth place, hopefully USA Basketball sees they need players, not freak shows and not dunks. They need players, and I think Aldridge is more that than Griffith.
Okay. I don't disagree with your logic from a basketball perspective. Aldridge is a more developed player. Aldridge is the more skilled player. Aldridge has a game that right now at this point in their career is much better suited for international play. But the one thing Aldridge will not give you that Blake Griffin will is the Frederick Weiss moment, which is the signature moment of every Olympic season, is that you got to have that one time where one of our guys just dunks on some unsuspecting 7-foot foreigner. And Blake is guaranteed to give that to you. He's guaranteed to jump over some dude's forehead and throw the ball through the roof, through the hoop. And that's why I think Blake is going to go. Blake, you know, I agree they're going to try to build new leaders, but Blake is just good marketing. And that's what Team USA is about more than anything. I don't know who Blake is. Who does Blake have a shoe deal with? I don't know if he has a shoe deal with yet, but I guarantee Key is going to be pushing for him to be on the team. All of the corporate people that are behind Blake Griffin are going to be pushing for him to be on the team. And for the entertainment value in itself, I want him to be on the team. I think without him and without Aldridge, they could win. So if you got to pick one of them, I'm going to take Blake because I know Blake is going to be more entertaining. That's my logic on the situation. They're going to win with that. Neither Blake Griffin or LaMarcus Aldridge is going to determine, unless somebody gets hurt, is going to determine whether or not they win this tournament. And then if you add in Chris Bosh, I mean, Bosh and Aldridge are very similar type of players. I'd say Blake would give them a guy who has the strength, because they're going to be going against the Gasols, which is a very big front line. Argentina has a formidable front line, so they're gonna need some weight on that front as well. So I think in an international setting, Blake actually could make a really good center in an international setting because you know he's not necessarily going against 7-footers, but he's going against 6'10" guys who are big and throw their weight around, and that's something that he can do. And plus, he's just gonna be more entertaining. So that's why I think he'll make it. But I totally agree with you guys that Aldridge is a better basketball player at this point. Absolutely. But I think Blake is going to wind up going because of popularity. So right now, the RSG Olympic roster, and I'm putting this on Facebook, and we're going to see, man. I'm putting this on Facebook. So our guards are Kobe Bryant, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, and Deron Williams. Our forwards, we got Bron, Durant, Melo, and Rudy Gay. Our big, we got D12, Kevin Love. Are we going LaMarcus Aldridge and Chris Bosh? Is that where we're going?
I'll fold with the Griffiths. I mean, the logic you guys made was solid. It's pragmatic. I'll go with Griffith.
Okay, so then Blake and Bosh.
And you got me convinced. I'll go with Griffith on that. For those reasons.
Okay.
That's why I said from the beginning. You know, I just think that you need to.
Yeah, I think y'all dead on as far as the basketball perspective. I think y'all dead on. Aldridge is a guy, if I'm purely putting together a basketball team, I'm definitely taking Aldridge. I feel you on that, PhD. I'm definitely taking Aldridge. He's just the more skilled player, and his game is definitely more international ready. It's more Eurobasket ready. You know what I'm saying? That's the first time. RSG, that's the first time you've heard somebody call Eurobasket ready. All right? That's not something anybody's getting ready for. So that's our RSG 2012 dream team. That's the dream team that we've picked. We'll see how accurate we are. I know we're going to catch a ton of flack for the D-Wade omit. I know we're going to catch a ton of flack for that. I'm going to put it on Facebook tomorrow afternoon and see what kind of hits we get, what kind of traffic we get on that one, man. Well, all right. That's another great show. It's about that time for us to wrap it up after our section. Check us out next week. Phil T., who are our guests? We got Coach Mike Jarvis coming on, correct?
Yeah, we got Coach Jarvis coming on as well as Eric Hamilton.
All right, we're going to talk about the draft. That's going to be an excellent conversation. Eric always brings it. It'll be great to have Mike Jarvis in, former St. John's coach, former GW coach. He's going to come in, and he's always a great interview. So please join us next week right here, same time, same place, Real Sports Guys, www.realsportsguys.com. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter, RSG Renegade Radio. We will see you next week. Be blessed.